2013 is here, and we're still alive. We have survived the apocalypse.
That's right, the apocalypse. But the apocalypse.
And also, the podcast has survived us, too.
Yes.
Welcome to episode 4 of the SFL Drifters podcast. I am your host, Captain Ben. Along with me, as always, Mr. Tim Murphy.
That's right.
This time around, we have Noel. Noel?
Hello.
Oh, gosh.
Like he's tested the mic. Great, I like that.
And today, we have a very special guest. It's the return of the legend, Mr. Juan Hinao. Say hello, Juan.
How are you doing, guys?
Ah, yes, indeed. So, we have a interesting episode, a great episode lined up for you today. We have a lot of things to talk about, as usual. Hopefully, we don't get too long. But in any case,
we're going to try to keep it within an hour and a half, folks.
We'll see. Yeah, we like to get crazy, but we got a couple of things to talk about, how 2012 went, what we look forward, looking forward in 2013. And some of the things that are happening recently, like the tech changes, the CFRC, and so forth. So let's just get started right away. Tim?
Yes.
I hear you have a couple of questions to ask him, Mr.
Well, yes, I do. Okay, first
Mr.
of all,
Mr. Hanau here.
Kept a phone contact with you for the most part, you know, on and off, because you were missing for a year and a half. But you said it was, what, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months?
Well, I disappeared from the grid about 6 months here.
It just seems a lot longer. But driving-wise, your car...
Is about 2.5 years.
Yeah, so your car's been about 2.5. You were, you know, always at the skid pad instructing, you know, helping out like always.
And by the way, how was the limo ride over here?
Yeah, how was the limo ride? I mean, it was
comfortable. They ran out of Patron, but I've managed.
Well, worked that. Yeah, because you know why? Because Rod probably rode that same limo last time, and he drank it all.
Okay.
You know, but what can you do?
I'll talk to him later.
So, anyhow, you've been...
But thank you, by the way.
Yeah.
It was very thoughtful of you guys.
Well, you know, we do our best.
We try. We with the little do. That we have.
With what we have, we make it work. So, but like I was saying, Your car has been down for about 2.5 years, and now you finally got it going. What have you been doing? You know, yes, your car's been down for that long, but you've been absent for about like 6 or 7 months or so. What's been going on? Has it just been work related? Is it personal? Anything happened, or have you just been focusing on the car?
Well, it's been a little bit of everything. I mean, I was having a lot of fun helping out at the track and seeing everybody drift, and then taking the Lexus out from time to time. But eventually, that takes a toll on the car itself, and I wanted to get my car back, and one of the things is I wanted to focus on my car, and at the same time, I wanted to focus on work. Work's starting to take a lot of my time, and I needed to just pull away for a little bit and just stay focused on my goal, which was to get the red car back by any means necessary. And it's not done yet. It's a little rushed, but that was my main goal. Get it back, just disappear for a while. Focus on the car, stop, you know, fooling around, get it done, get back out there, and that's pretty much.
And you were working at DT Performance, I think, around you went from DT Performance to Mercedes about the same time you kind of dropped out, correct?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I left DT Performance and Wheels back in February, and I started at Mercedes-Benz of Miami, and it just started taking a lot of my time, so I eventually just had to drop off, but it's paid off, you know.
Right. Okay, so, and what's up with the car? You said it was kind of rushed. I know I towed it over to, what was that shop I towed it over to?
You took it over to Richie from Raw Auto Works.
Okay, Raw Auto Works. I know, I remember I took it over there for you. I think they were supposed to finish the whole thing, correct?
Well, initially he wanted to. He did most of the fabrication. He did the custom-made headers. He fitted the individual throttle bodies to work proper. He redesigned a lot of the the front end of the car to help fit a lot of things. The exhaust piping, I mean, he capped off everything that was completely useless in that motor, fixed it all up, everything. So he did a lot of work on the car. It took him some time, but we were missing a lot of parts.
Right.
Once he was done with that, I took it over to Jimmy, and Jimmy started doing some of the the Chinese wiring guy. That's pretty much what most people know.
I don't think I've met him before.
Trust me, meet him once, you'll never forget him.
Oh, okay.
He started working on the car, but he had to fly out to China, so he couldn't finish it. So I took it to Jerry from Boost Lab.
Right.
He finished up the car.
I actually saw it before. you brought it over because I had went over to Jerry's house to talk to him about the King of Cowland to make sure, because I know he just always, he's kind of always missing in action. So I sometimes I have to drive by his house to make sure he knows what's going on. You know, to give him like personal updates. You know, hey Jerry, you know, by the way, you're gonna be, oh yeah, yeah, I'll be there. And then I look over, and he's like, you know whose car that is, right? I'm like, well, it didn't have all the stickers all over it. And I was like, well, it was just one's car. He's like, that's right. He goes, yeah, I just got a little more wiring to do. And then sure enough, like the next week, I think you pulled up. And
yeah.
It sounds amazing. I mean.
Thank you.
I know you said it's got, you know, a lot of tweaking to do, and it's what you originally planned on it.
Well, like I said, I wanted to have the car done, you know, come out with the car, come out stronger, have a good time with it, uh-huh. You know, just go right into the track and not worry about anything else or finish it. But it is the just trying to get it back out. I mean, I had an itch, man. I had to get it back.
And, yeah,
that's what we did. We still have a lot of tuning to do. We just got a really rough tune, a street tune. We're going to fine-tune it and then, you know, do some head work on that engine and just work through it.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, we know the chassis is solid. Now yeah. it's just, you know, working on the power plant. You know, it seems like it has a good foundation. So, I mean, I'm sure it'll be...
It's tons of fun. It's just, like I said, we got more work to do. Yeah. It ain't over yet.
Did you specify what's the power plant that you're running with?
Oh, no, yeah, I didn't ask. Well,
it's a 1990 Lexus LS400 engine known as the 1U ZFE.
Yes, indeed.
1U ZFE.
And what made you choose that platform, the engine option?
Yeah, I know where you're going with this. I really know where you're going with this.
Just roll with me here. Come on.
Just roll with it? I don't know where you're going, but we'll do it.
We'll roll with you. Well, after a lot of research, I did a lot of research on what would be the better engine. After seeing a couple of our drivers, Florida and, you know, out of state, have a couple of issues with the LS1 as far as durability at the track.
Oil, starving.
Yeah, the oil starvation and a lot of the modifications that go into it. Mm-hmm. I started looking to go back into the Japanese platforms, look at the VH and the 1UZ. And, you know, being that it's not necessarily the fastest motor out there, it is by far one of the most reliable motors out there. Right. And at any person that I spoke to that knows about engines, builds engines, even engineers would tell me that you could push that motor all day and they'll last. And they're not necessarily abundant, but they're very easy to find for a very low price.
Why don't more people use it? That's what I'm kind of curious, because it does seem like a logical. I mean, they're all over the junkyard.
Yeah, they are.
You know, finding that is easy to find that. Of course, there's the customization and the custom fabrication you have to deal with, but you have to deal with that any motor swap for the most part.
Right, but you got to understand, I mean, people fear what they don't know, and a lot of people just go with the LS1 because there's so much out there for that.
Like I fear the rotaries.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
that's justified.
That's about everybody.
That's justified.
Yeah.
But there's people that love the rotaries.
Unless you're Puerto Rican or Jeremy Lowe.
One of the two.
But a lot of people actually just fall into the place where nobody uses the motor. Nobody wants to acknowledge the motor because it's just like, oh, it's just a big chassis car motor. It's not a big deal. It's weak. It's whatever. It's got a lot of potential. I mean, a lot of parts inside are forged from factory, you know, aircraft quality engine.
It's a
really solid motor.
So are you, Jason Gill, and Giacomo going to start a little 1UZ club?
I haven't even talked to this guy because they haven't seen the car, I guess. So.
It's interesting to hear you speak so highly about the motor. And not just yourself, but the people that you spoke to as well. Because it's great to know that a lot of people see it that way. But you don't often hear that from BMW motors. So it just goes to show the superiority and the build quality and the attention to detail that you get from Toyota and the motors that they build.
Hey, you know what's the best part?
Wait, hold a second.
You don't necessarily hear that
from
BMW.
He said it's not running correctly, right?
I said it wasn't done.
That is owner's error. Okay?
That is owner error.
All right.
You know, I could go to any store and buy tools to work on my engine.
Oh, I can too.
No, it's you got to have like specialty tools for BMW.
It's just what you think.
You
got to
go to Lona Tools on AutoZone.
No, it's not that hard. No.
Another great reason why Toyota is better than BMW.
I don't have a comeback for that. I was definitely caught off guard on that one. But all I can say is you're wrong.
Okay. We can agree to disagree.
Yeah, no, we can agree that you're wrong.
I do know that the 1UZ is Toyota's... that's the motor that they put the most money in R&D
Okay.
And of all their engines, they put $400 million.
And what do they get? How much horsepower does it put out?
A super reliable engine.
A super okay. What? Exactly. But it's okay. But how much power does it put
out? Excuse
me, Tim. BMW did not put out that much money to bring out the M motor.
Excuse me,
probably
Tim.
Did. But
power isn't everything.
Oh yeah, I want to okay. go. I want to spend all that money on a motor to make me go slow. But it's reliable.
It's also very light. It's lighter than an SR20.
What BMW motor is not reliable?
Well, we talk about weight now.
No. What BMW?
But we're talking about as the whole package.
What BMW motor is not reliable?
What BMW motor is cheap?
No. That ain't. M20, M50, M50, M20, all those.
Really?
I mean,
elaborate. How much can you get one of those engines for?
I can go to Junker and get M50 all day long for a couple $100. Louis Lizardi, stock M50, 450 horsepower to the wheels. And you saw him ripping up in the beige E36?
Mm-hmm. Okay, wait. But
stock motor.
Hold on.
Is that
at your price, or is that at every average person price?
Go to you pull it.
Okay.
Now, on this level, I kind of have to agree with Tim a little bit. I mean,
as much as I
really don't want to.
I thought you were on our side.
I am. I'm a Toyota Nissan Toyota guy.
Good.
Lexus, whatever you want to call it. However, I do want to be fair in that level. You can find the motor cheap anywhere. And they're not bad motors. I'm not going to say they're the best thing around.
Transmissions
are great. Bad motors.
The transmissions, the Getrag transmissions, the ZF transmissions.
We're not talking about transmissions here.
I'm not.
If you want to throw apples to apples, compare your inline 6 M motor to a 2J twin turbo. And let's see where that goes.
But the M motor is the new...
It's same year, it's the same year. Compare. Because they don't make the 2Js anymore. So I think it would be fair to compare with the years that both of them were made at the same time. Would that be a fair comparison?
A stock Supra, what year did they stop making the
98.
Supra?
98.
98. So I'd have to find the specs on an M3, 98.
The
M3. S52? No, I think it was S54. Was that S52 or S54?
S52.
Was S52?
S54 came in the E46.
Oh, okay. Well, what is that?
Wow.
Yeah,
good job, buddy.
Wow. That's good.
Well, I mean,
he's a stats guy, though.
I'm not exactly stats.
You more than I am.
Well, I'm just...
Well, you randomly corrected us at the meet for some little minor detail for some reason. I don't even remember, but we're like... WTF.
Okay, you take... And you have to... Wait, hold on. So you have to include a transmission, because that's part of the powertrain. So, see, you guys don't include transmission, because you know Toyota transmissions are crap.
Not necessarily. The L154 isn't that bad.
No, the L154, okay. That's what I'm saying, is tell me a bad BMW motor. Pick one. Tell me which one, because it's not the old single cams, because I beat the hell out of mine. You can find... There's plenty of bad Toyota motors.
I don't know that much.
1J, 2J are probably only good motors.
Oh. Wait a minute.
You almost made me fall back on my chair.
I did that on purpose because you threw my curveball.
There is the 3S.
There's a lot of motors we could throw here that are actually really good from Toyota.
Why don't we save that for the next episode?
Yeah.
I'm going to do some homework.
To be continued.
But I was going
to
say, if... You know, and I want to look this up now.
Oh, no.
No, you
just
started it.
Just finish.
This is going to turn into another game.
Let's keep
you
on going with Juan.
You finish it. I'm going to research.
being that you've recently come back, and not too many people know...
Came back.
Yes, came
Whatever.
Back. I'm sorry. I'm Spanish. I can talk like this. It's fine.
Yeah, he's Cuban. He can talk like
you're America, though.
Upon your return.
Anyway, yes.
You're in America. Talk American.
A lot of people, you know, that haven't had too much contact with you. We don't know too much about what's going on with you. I mean, what are your future plans in the career of drifting? Are you looking just to have fun, take it a little more serious, going to Pro-Am? You know, what do you plan from here on out?
Well, as of right now, I'm just kind of... Want to have a good time with the car. My main plan right now is get the car back, enjoy the car, have a good time, and kind of start from scratch again. You know, I missed a lot of, oh man, I got to make the event, I got to fix this thing right here, fix this thing, go to the event, you know, drift, have a good time, go back home, and then do it again following weekend or next month. You know, I really miss that, and I want to get back to that. To that level, a lot of the guys that we have nowadays, a lot of the new guys coming to the sport have a huge benefit to what we didn't have back then, which was plenty of events, Plenty of media coverage, you know.
We used skip pad.
Skip pad, a clinic every 2 weeks, you know. Big track events, and not just within the South Florida region, but, you know, central and outside of the state as well. So a lot of the newcomers have great benefit to start with. And that's kind of like when I want to get back. I want to hit every track. I remember that's what I used to do. Just, oh, there's an event here. Let's go. Let's ride. Yep. Oh, there's an event there. Let's ride, you know. And I missed that. And I want to get back to that and little by little build up. It's a new platform. It's a new engine. It's a new just about everything. I mean, I got a lot more mods than just the engine swap now. It's going to be I actually got the Driftworks GeoMaster 2 kit in the car.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's not 100% in there, but I'm putting it in. I was trying to get it for the skip pad. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to, but it will go in. So there's a lot of things I want to build up to, and I don't want to just jump to a Pro-Am event to test and tune.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's just not going to work. And on top of that, unfortunately, my job right now will not allow me to go to start traveling for Pro-Am.
Yeah.
So I figured let me, you know, get my feet wet a little more on this new setup and go out and just have a good time. You know, take it back to what I started it for, you know, just a good time.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm going to go with it. And eventually, maybe 2014 will be the year for me to just, you know, build something really serious out there and then just get on Pro-Am. But, yeah, I do plan on being a Pro-Am and any other series that comes along.
So watch out, guys. The legend is back, and he's taking names with him. Any more?
That was just my single question.
Okay. Tim?
I'm researching. Hold on.
You're still on the BMW.
What are you doing?
I guess I got him in a low blow there. Okay.
It's personal.
Let's just move on.
Seeing that I just purchased another BMW.
Yeah, very nice, by the way. Congrats.
Oh, yeah, thank you. The midlife crisis.
Let's just move on. Juan, I just got to say it's great to have you back.
Thank you. We wish
you nothing but success. And hopefully you can sort out the issues that you have, the minor issues that you have so far. But with time and seat time and handing up the events, time, also dedication, you'll be able to work that out. And you'll be the star that you always were to begin with.
Thank you.
If that even makes sense.
That's very sweet.
It does? Oh, okay. I guess. Anyway. So moving on.
Trying to.
Are you done? Have you done your research?
I'm gonna do more research.
Oh, he's plotting.
All right, so be ready for the next episode.
We'll talk more in depth.
Can't let the topic die.
So there's been rumors going around, from what I hear. I don't know. I've just been told about this that advanced drivers are not pushing it to the next level.
Mr. Q.
Now, does anybody here want to comment on that, or better yet, has anybody else heard about this and want to comment on that?
Well, I mean, I
have it. This is the first I hear, and this
Ben's bringing this up is Juan was actually asking us earlier. You know, he was asking us. You know, I prefer. Well, go ahead. You say it because it better come from you because it was really you brought it to our attention.
Well, yeah. I mean, as much as I've disappeared, I mean, I still linger in the shadows and I see things and I still know a lot of people.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, I've always been involved in the background somehow. So I hear a lot of people saying, "Hey, you know what? This guy's awesome, but he wasn't pushing at this event. I don't know what happened." Or it's same engine, same car, same everything. Just I don't know. He didn't put it down like he normally does, and it wasn't just one driver.
Well, let me ask you something. Did they also tell you some guys pushed it way too much, like Jason Guild?
Well,
Jason Guild.
But it's not even at an event. It's been an ongoing thing for what I've heard. It wasn't just okay. It just happened.
What are you saying, one event ago? When we started County Line was in the early days of Jeremy Lowe's career, and I think even Pat Gooden drove. He drove down. I know he was down. Did he ever drive County Line?
He came down for County Line.
Yeah, he did come.
No,
down
they
for
came
County
down for. I mean, when you started County Line, like back in 2007, you mean?
Yeah.
I think J-Lo showed up in 2008.
Well, but J-Lo started driving in 07. I remember that.
No, he did start in 07 because I remember everybody talking about this guy with crazy guy rotary and OSW, I think
yeah.
it was.
Yeah.
Or DeSoto.
But
when he started.
My point being is that it seemed like in that era, it seemed like, well, from what I've heard too, and I guess I kind of see it, but at the same time, well, at least up until recently, I've been kind of locked in and in the County Line cave. You know, I haven't really branched out until this past year and been able to watch other drivers. I think what it comes down a lot of time is, and I know this with myself as well, it depends on who I'm driving with. You know, because if I'm tandem with somebody I don't tandem with a lot, I'm not going to push it because, to me, I have to rebuild my own car.
Yeah.
You know? Now, on the pro level, I think the drivers are way more aggressive and have stepped it up a lot more on the pro level because I see closer tandems this year. So, on in the pro aspect,
proximity.
I think it's gotten better. Proximity, bananas, whatever, has gotten better. But I think on the grassroots side, I think I believe a lot of people are weighing the because what are you really doing? You're gonna get really close tandem for who? What the few spectators are there?
Right.
So it comes down to, and I know Pat Gooden had talked at me before. You know, he goes, "Why am I getting close wall?" He goes, "This is my pro car. Why am I going to push it to limit, wreck it, and fix it, and try to get ready or have a chance to or I'm saying how can I say this?
We just want a risk of damaging the car
risk
and not make the risk.
The car, exactly. Yeah. That's what I meant. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Risk. So
well, it goes to every driver's mind, though. I mean, at the end of the day.
Oh yeah,
I can see
and
that.
It's one of,
especially
it's not
when
like,
you fix your own car.
Right. And it's not like you could just bump somebody and be like, "Well, let's swap insurances." Doesn't
unless
work that
unless
way.
You're down.
But I know some drivers who just they push it all the time.
Like
well, there's those guys. Those guys are like the missile cars.
Well, no, not just
really
that.
That doesn't really count, though, because they don't really care about their cars.
But what I'm talking about, they push it on and off the track.
Like street drifting?
No, not always street drifting, but just going fast, cutting through traffic. Like
what's wrong with
going
through the gas station? Or, I mean, I'm not sorry, going through the grocery store with your cart?
Well,
sliding the corners with the eggs in there?
That's
pushing it, buddy.
What's wrong with that?
Hey, wait your turn.
What I'm trying to get at is why do they need to push it on everyday traffic when it's not a race or anything like that?
Well, see, you're drifting off the topic on that level.
Yeah, you are. It has nothing to do with being outside of the track.
He's
talking about drivers.
Right, in the track.
Advanced drivers, cage drivers, whatever you want to call them, pushing it on even during practice.
Yeah.
Like Bill. Bill always pushes it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
He knows one, and that's, all the way.
I'm just trying to poke fun at Mr. Hernow because he's a sort of a menace to society on the public roads.
Really? You really?
Well, especially when he's late to work.
Oh.
In the mornings.
It happens.
Go speed racer. Go speed racer.
Why else does he have his GS the way that how it is?
GS is nice.
No, I'm sorry. Amazing. I love it. But, the thing is, though, you got to understand, that thing was engineered to have a turbo engine. Not an NA cow
yes,
engine.
Yes, indeed. You're right.
But Toyota decided not to put a turbo.
Well,
it
was an American choice.
It's an American choice.
Yes.
It really was.
But they decided to play it safe because they didn't want to decimate the competition.
Well,
but again,
even BMW, they down-tuned their cars to send them to the U.S.
Well, exactly.
Well, the Japanese are very honorable. They didn't want to embarrass the Germans.
Yes, indeed. Yes. All right. But going back, advanced drivers not necessarily pushing it.
Well, I mean, we could push this to a certain level with that because, I mean, it's not just advanced drivers. I mean, I've also heard some of the rookies that just keep making the same mistake over and over. I want to say rookies, but like the beginner class make the same mistake, and they get comfortable with a certain spot, and they don't want to push to the next level.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like you get to a certain point, you don't want to stop there. You know, you want to put your skill to the next level. You put a goal for you to chase after, and then I remember back in the day, I remember hearing from other drivers like, "Man, I want a tandem with you. That'll be awesome, man. I'm gonna get better at it."
I remember hearing that.
Make it happen. Let's go. You know, and I'll try to help people out. Like, follow me, follow my line. Stay away, but follow my line. You know,
stay away.
The funny thing is, I remember a story. Jerry Montero, GS Racer, nice one by the way. He was setting up to tandem with Juan at Homestead Miami Speedway.
Jerry, set up
tandem. Well, listen here. And the interesting thing about it was when they took off, Jerry was in front, and they went into the first turn. Jerry looked back to Juan, and during mid-drift, Juan was like, He pointed to him to look forward. Don't look back at me. Look forward. And Jerry was like, "Oh!" and that he looked forward from then on.
Oh my God, that was one of the scariest things. It was just, you know, he's looking back at me like, "What are you doing? I'm behind you." You know, look forward. Yeah, well, at least out of your driver door, which is the way we were going.
But was that the same event that Abraham lost his wheel?
I believe it was.
I wasn't running tech.
I think the wheel was looking back at Abraham.
I was running tech. That was AT.
Was
after Tim.
Okay. Was that event also? Was that event also when you got hit by Estee's bumper?
No, that was another event.
Okay, that was another event.
Yeah,
okay.
that was
what's
pretty
going
gnarly.
On? Not to get off topic here, but what's up with the homestead? I just talked to
Mayor. Oh, I got a really sad story with that.
Oh.
Yeah, I heard they want us back.
What?
Yeah. They actually...
Or they want Mo back?
No, I don't know what the true story behind that was, but...
Farrah wants us back.
I took the 240 to the two tower shops over in University in 595, and one of the guys who races at Farrah was there with his Genesis coupe. Beautiful, white, you know, nice.
Is it?
It's a skinny, tall guy. I forgot his name. Super
but did
nice
it have
guy.
The livery on it?
I don't recall.
Because
I recall when he left pissed.
He was pissed?
It could have been that he was upset about me. Here's the thing. I backed into the spot right behind him. And the motor had just been finished. So it had a lot of, like, crap to spit back out.
Yeah.
And his white car was just waxed. So my friend Ahmed comes in and goes, "Dude, I got to hear this engine." So I crank it on and I revved it. And I see Ahmed look behind my car. And
Ahmed?
Yeah, no. Not Duty. Well. Ahmed with the gorgeous S14 with nice wheels.
Okay.
Anyways, he looks back behind my car and just makes his face like, "Oh, my God." And then just looks at me and smiles. I'm like,
so
okay, whatever.
Your car spit on his car.
Oh, it was bad for what I heard. It was
well,
nasty.
It's more like a snot rocket almost.
It was like a bloody snot rocket. It was just like
fart.
Really just chunky and brown.
It was like a shark.
Shard. You sharded on this guy's car.
Oh,
wow.
No wonder why he was upset.
Well, I can understand. And the sad part is before when I arrived, he was like, "Hey, you remember me?" I'm like, "I remember the face. I'm just really bad with names." So he reintroduced himself. And he told me, he goes, "Look, man, we've been running events at Homestead. We've been getting a lot of crowd, and we could really use your demos back. You know, so let's try to, you know, be really cool to work something back out." Well, I mean.
Just because, you know what the thing is every, you know, too, is every. Up until, like, Mo just, you know, finally just started running with it. Dude, I'd run an event, and it would go fine. We did a couple of them, me and Ben. We did a couple of them. There was no problem with what we were doing. They always wanted to charge the drivers. They never wanted to give them that much seat time, and it was a demo. And it just didn't seem fair to charge drivers $100-something to drive. Most of the drivers that are the only drivers that were good enough were coming up from Central Florida and a couple in Broward. And it was hard to get anybody there, and then you want to charge them $100 for about 15 minutes of seat time?
To burn your own tires?
Yeah.
There was really no compensation other than the glory of Homestead.
Right. The only way you can get drivers there to do a demo is to let them do it for free. So it was always a battle. I got tired of it, and that was about one of the times I started doing the EMT paramedic thing. So, you know, they approached Mo. But even so, the two or three events before Mo took place, remember they got that one guy that was doing the car show?
Yeah.
Well, he ended up calling me. We ended up running it.
Yeah.
The two or three people that they were trying to – they're always trying to go around me to run the drifting, and then whoever they go around me to run the drifting was calling me to help them run the drifting. So either way, I was always there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't like Farrah because, you know, they're going to tell me one thing and they're going to do another. And then they finally got Mo, and Mo called me up and said, "Hey, you know, they asked me if you want to." I was like, "Dude, Mo, you know what, go ahead." But the first two events that Mo did, I was there, and Mo didn't show up until right before we started.
That's another story.
So,
but I'm just saying.
Time.
Well, but it doesn't matter. I mean, responsibility is responsibility. If you're going to take something, you take it, and you do it right.
100% agree.
And with Farrah, I don't want to do it. I don't want to really have anything to do with Farrah because that's kind of disrespectful. You know, if you don't think I'm doing something right, then approach me. Don't try to get somebody else when that person's just going to end up getting me or Ben anyways.
Right.
So anyways, that's just my little vent.
I think the most frustrating part for Tim was the fact that at every event, it was something different. It was a different story.
It was a different
because
problem.
They would demand something different.
Oh, well.
And if it was just set in stone beforehand, and if it was just, like, fixed at every event, then it'd be, like, not as aggravating to begin with.
You know what? We made up for it. I mean, we pissed these guys off really good. I mean, we were drifting the
parade lap.
The parade lap.
That was just one event. That was under Mo's watch. That was on the most watched.
I mean,
but the thing is, we got
reckless with it.
But that was already like a year or so after we were doing them.
And no, I understand.
That was Mo's first event. Mo wasn't there. I had to handle that. I had to recommend you guys. And not only that is, I had to talk to the VP of Homestead and tell him to not cancel the drifting because you guys are doing it. I had to do that. That wasn't even my responsibility. It was Mo's responsibility to do that. But I had to do it.
Right. And, you know, there's another thing is I really noticed, and as much as I am a fan of racing and road racing in particular, mm-hmm. I would see just small patches of people by the fences. When the drift cars went out to the track,
everybody was there.
That fence was packed. There was nowhere to sit. There was not even a place to stand by the fence because everybody was against the fence with mm-hmm. their cameras and phones trying to videotape the drifters going mm-hmm. down the track. And right. I'm not trying to say that we're the ones that brought the people to the fence, but let's be real. You know what I mean? There was people there already watching some races, and you could only see a car going one time, and that's it. And we'll see that car come back in about a minute and a half or so. Whereas the drifters were coming down, then turn around, go up. And not only that, it was two or three at a time. So
right.
that brings a lot of attention.
I was going to say something. I'm sorry. No.
You use a dirty mind. Anyways.
Absolutely.
No.
It's hard to get drivers down there.
I mean,
Jesus.
That Homestead really is not a good area to have drift track because just South Florida already is hard to get drivers to come down. Now you're going to make them drive another hour further south. I mean, it has plenty of land. They have the potential to do something, but it's going to be really hard to do anything.
And Homestead, that place is like a block away from Cuba. So for anybody, even if you live in South Florida, it's still a drive.
Yeah.
No, it is.
I mean, I live pretty much south of almost everybody on the forums.
Except for Homestead.
And I don't want to drive down to Homestead. It's a long drive.
It doesn't matter where you're coming from. There's there's not like a lot of the drivers who fall into the criteria that they're looking for that live within the area. So it's a bit of a drive for everybody, and for them to want to charge. I mean, I can see why they want to charge, but they're already collecting their money from the drivers who are doing the road racing and everything else.
Exactly,
so,
they're taking a lunch break.
Right, exactly. So the truck would be dead. There's nothing to do at
exactly.
that point in time.
So it's why not make the crowd happy? Give something for the crowd to do while all the drivers are eating crap, eating dogs and stuff.
Right,
but I don't know. For me, it's. I think County Line is probably as far south as you're really going to be able to go to get drivers. And we don't even get drivers from north, really.
Yeah, well,
very rarely.
I see some people. It's nice to see different faces when they come. I get so stoked when I see a driver from out of state come to County Line.
That is cool.
That, to me, is an event. And I'm like, dude, thank you. That shows dedication.
Actually, we have
that shows
one
heart.
Came down for a skip pad.
We had somebody come from Greece.
Wow.
He didn't drive, but he's actually competed in the King of Europe and is the Greek champion, drift champion. Now, he's trying to move here. I did hook him up with Formula D, and I don't know what happened with that.
Yeah.
Andy Luck. And Andy Luck said he'd handle it. You know, I gave all information. So we'll see what happens, because if he was competing pro and he had his pro license in Europe, he can't petition.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen his videos. He's definitely good enough.
Yeah.
So that would be nice to see, because he has an Alfa Romeo. So he drives. He slides an Alfa Romeo. Like 700 horsepower Alfa Romeo.
I brought it up because there was a specific person came down from, I think it was Minnesota or something like that, and they decided to pass by a skip pad for their vacation, as part of their vacation.
Was there
on the forum? I forgot who.
Did he drift?
Yeah, they drifted.
What car was this?
It was an S13 hatch.
A black one, right? With
a black one. His girlfriend was drove it, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't tell me they drifted an S13, because that's like...
Was this a skid pad?
Over half a skid pad, yeah. But you bring up the guy from Greece, and it makes me think back to some of the other people from just randomly other parts of the world that just appeared. I remember one time, some guy from Finland came over.
Yeah, a pro driver. Harry brought a pro driver with a school car.
That's right, yeah.
We actually switched cars with him.
Yeah,
I drove the school car, and he drove my car.
Yeah.
Nice.
And actually, thinking back to that, you know, I was just finding it odd how he was e-braking into the first turn. We're like, why is he doing that? It was just odd.
Never mind. We had Frederick Osbo.
That's what I was going to bring
up. That is just amazing.
Yeah, Frederick Osbo drove my car. That was cool.
The Swedish hammer, I think? No, Norwegian hammer.
Norwegian hammer.
Sorry.
Norwegian hammer.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But
that drives me nuts.
To kind of go back to the original topic we were talking about, I have to agree with what Tim was saying, that how if it's a regular event, why there's really no incentive to really push it. And right. I think the key thing is to kind of pick your battles, in a sense, pick your events that you really want to push it, so that way you push yourself as a driver too. But you don't necessarily need to be pushing it all the time. And you do want to push it because in the event of a big event, you can handle the pressure and you can handle yourself at the limit, and you don't.
Well, not only that is when you drive. Some people, I'm just going to tandem with this person. They always tandem together. Yeah, they have great tandems, puts a good show on. But in all reality, you're hurting yourself.
Oh, of course,
you should push the limit, but you should be able to. In drift, know when to push limit and when to draw back and have that control to do so.
Of course.
Yes. Well,
but,
and be able to predict what the other driver is doing.
That's different to what I'm trying to get at. Mm-hmm. But the point I'm trying to get at is essentially to kind of like pick your own battles. Choose your battles.
Mm-hmm.
And work yourself out at the limit and under the limit. And know that you don't always have to be at the limit.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't necessarily need to.
Right. If you're going to push the limit, you should just push the limit within your own limits. Because there's drivers that they just go all out crazy and...
I have a good example.
And
they think they're pushing the limit.
I have a good example. Jerry Montero. He always does solo laps.
Okay.
He doesn't want a tandem. I mean, he's somebody that's very... He has the potential...
I believe he has a lot of
time. I understand why.
Because that's
though.
His baby.
Exactly.
Do you think if he gets another car and. I don't think he can build a car that he's not afraid to damage. Because he's going to put all the time and sweat, and I totally understand it because he is very meticulous.
No, he could.
And his car
the problem is he puts so much time and effort into it. He takes pride into what he puts together.
He does great work.
He does. The car looks amazing, handles amazing.
Right.
To give you an example of how. How can I put it? I'm not even going to bother. For instance, Jerry Montero went out to CFRC. I was mm-hmm. talking to Chelsea DeNova.
And he was ripping.
Chelsea stopped talking to me so that way he could focus on Jerry and how he was driving and his car.
Right.
And after Jerry did his run, Chelsea was like, oh, I wish I could drive that car.
Yeah,
the car has ridiculous potential.
It just goes to show the build quality of it.
The potential of it, exactly.
Thank mm-hmm. you. That even somebody like Chelsea can realize, not even being in the car,
right?
Well, you don't have to. I mean, you can see that the potential at Caroline. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that car
is just one off.
Fast. I mean, I've never seen anything go around the skid pad faster.
Well, what is this line? Like 305, 295?
I've seen him use 315s before.
Yeah. Falcon
but those are, I mean, those are like his those daily are... tires, though.
But he still slides on
them. I don't care,
them.
Man.
Yeah,
that's a gnarly size for a skid pad, nonetheless.
You can just see it. Anytime like he gets on the gas, it just starts pulling. It just goes.
And he has his moments where he's, like... The King second round King Caroline. I don't know what was going on. I think he switched the motor.
He didn't get any sleep.
And that's the problem. But here's the thing. This is bringing it back to the original question, and it wasn't even like a question. It's more like I just wanted to get feedback because mm-hmm. I mean I've been gone. I mean
right.
poofed from right. the whole thing, and this is one of the things that I started to pick up from what
don't
some people were telling me.
Sorry, I just redlined the mic.
Yes,
what some people were telling me. From my personal experience. If you don't use your skip pad, you use your big track events to find your next level, not to just chill out and see what I could do and, maybe have some chick throw me her panties on the crowd. No, oh. It's for me to just
like
find...
Like Noel?
Yeah.
I would do something like that.
What in my underwear? It stuck to your windshield.
I put it on his windshield wiper on.
And the Toyota logo on it.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So does that mean Toyota's crap?
No, it's not.
Okay, so anyways, go ahead.
Wow.
No,
he has the M straps in the back. But the fact, what I'm trying to tell you is, in practice, for example, when I went out, I will try to find my level at practice, so I don't have to try to push it at the competition because you don't know who you're going to go up against. You practice hard, you play hard, you know, and that's you do. And that's the way it is.
I'm laughing about something else.
Regardless, the bottom line is
the M thing. I was like, well, you just took a Toyota morning, you just put it in a dumpster because you put it in a Nissan.
I have to laugh.
Well, yeah, I bet you did.
Anyways.
But what I'm trying to get at is you don't go to a competition where the stakes are high to find your next level, to see, oh, man, now I got to figure out how this guy's going to drive. Oh, I got to figure out how to use an e-brake, how to clutch kink, what speed I got to go in, where's my line. You don't do that. You do it on practice days and small competitions. Yes, I do agree that you don't want to blow your car up just on a big track event that has, you know, just titles and maybe a couple of payouts. You know, you will blow your motor up. I'm telling you, winner takes $10,000. I will set my car on fire if I have to.
Yeah,
because
I think you did that.
That's
I set that bitch ablaze. But the bottom line is, you push for the main competition. But I knew then that I could push to that level because I've been playing at that level at local practices. And that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, what I hear is that some of these guys go to the events, and because they're trying something new at an actual possible competition, they don't deliver. They spin out, they understeer, they're, you know, it's not so much mechanical failure, but it's more like
they're trying harder, but they're trying harder in a time where it counts.
Right.
Now you're going to try harder, but now if you fail, the consequences are worse because now you're not going to qualify.
Yeah, but you're trying harder. You're failing because you haven't tried it before. Or maybe you try, but he's like, I'll save it for a big day.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal opinion, that's not the way to do it. It's you practice, and practice makes you puts you in the next level.
Well, then you can kind of ask yourself, are some of the pros pushing it all the time? Like, for instance, and this is it's a good transition segue over to our other topic, which is Formula Drift in 2012. Daigo Saito. He wasn't necessarily pushing it at every event. Especially during qualifying. See, here's the smart thing about Daigo.
Is it smart, though?
Of course.
Why not qualify high, get the points, helps better in a season, and then you go against the last place qualifier. That makes it easier to go.
Because think about the type of people that you're going to be going up against. For instance, if you qualify, like, for instance, Von Ginn, I think he qualified
he was
one or two throughout most of the events.
Yeah, he was.
And some of the cars that he went up against weren't at the same level as his car was. So
it would screw him up.
Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Per se, like, for instance, in Formula D, Long Beach, the first round, he essentially knocked himself out. He spun out.
Yeah, he's pushed himself out of competitions before.
Well, no, but what he's saying is now, okay, if you're in the middle of the road, you're going against the middle of the road guys, but when you qualify high, you're going against the not as consistent drivers. So they try to
work for you.
Yeah, it's more work because, you know, Von Gittin, he's always putting pressure on whoever he's following, but now he's putting pressure on somebody who maybe doesn't have a good line. So that's going to throw him off, and he's going to overcorrect, and it's going to throw him out of the competition.
When he messed up, that was his lead run. He could have just pulled away on that very easily.
Was it?
Yeah, it was on his lead run.
Okay.
And then his follow run was insane. He was just on his door the whole time.
That's right.
Well, anyways, I don't remember it anyway. So
what do you guys think about 2012 FD?
It was definitely a, I can't say turning point, but with the whole proximity thing, like, this is the first year I watched just about every episode.
Same here.
Yeah.
Before, I was like, it was almost like watching any other tandem we have at the grassroots. I mean, there's a couple car lengths between. It was nothing exciting. This year was the most exciting year for FD. So hopefully 2013 can capitalize. And, you know, even if it doesn't get better, it stays the same. It was a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, every year that I've seen, they've gotten better and better, and this year
But this is drastic.
Drastic change. Now, along with all the good that has come this year, there was a lot of bad, especially we've talked about it before, judging.
Right.
Like, some events were okay, they were reasonable calls, but some other events were completely unreasonable.
Yes.
And when I went to Atlanta, it was I took my dad for the first time to ever see drifting ever, and aww. he was like, "Wow, this is cool." And then when he started seeing the judging, like once he started figuring out how to judge the events, he was like, "That guy's off. Why are they giving him the win? Why is this happening?"
And I will. You know, for the judge's sake, and being a judge, and you will know this as well,
yeah.
And especially after going through the King and Cali line, the finals, I've seen videos from where all the spectators are, mm-hmm. and then I know, as us being in the middle,
yeah.
what we saw, when I watched some of the videos from some of the spectators, I was like, it didn't look like that where we were.
Yeah.
You could see more. So sometimes the judges, actually, just about every time, the judges are in a better position to see more, and not just more, but be able to see everything.
Yeah.
As a point where spectators are kind of put at one point as well. The spectators also, what I realized with the USCC is, need to be educated. They're not I don't think FD, they do it a little bit, but I think they need to do a little more. But even though there were still, educated or not, or better position or not, FD made some really bad calls this year.
Well, speaking of like your vantage point where you're seeing the track, I was spotting at round three at PBIR,
mm-hmm.
and I could definitely see the difference between seeing it from that high point, like where you're next to the judges,
mm-hmm.
versus where you're just level on the track with all the rest of the spectators. And there is a difference. You definitely can see the lines better. You can even see the angles that they're coming in. You know, it gives you a different perspective, and maybe that's what the judges, you know, that's why the judges make some of these calls. But then again, some of these calls are just plain ridiculous.
Yes.
But I mean, so, let me ask something. Don't they have like a replay?
They have a replay, but
yeah, they do. So I mean,
it's like football now.
You can watch a replay and make your decision.
That's true.
There shouldn't really be any inconsistencies or...
That's true, yeah.
Well, but one of my main criticisms about it is that it doesn't seem like the judges care so much about the decisions that they make. And they should, especially now that they record every single one of every single run, every event they record it. And mm-hmm. anybody, any driver could basically just go back to it and... Or any spectator, they could just use it to criticize the judges.
Right. I mean, but the drivers could dispute as well, correct?
Oh yeah, they can.
Exactly. So
the judges, here's the problem. They could dispute it when the event, the battle happens. They can't dispute it afterwards.
No,
your team has to dispute it.
It's always been like that. I mean, yeah. Nopi, dispute something when I was running Nopi.
But really, your team has to dispute it.
Right.
Because when you're leading, you can't really keep eyes on. You don't know what's happening.
Right. Yeah. But then again, that's what I'm trying to get at. If you could dispute it right there and then, if you think the call was unfair, it's up to your team to take over and be like, hey, wait a minute. That was not the way we saw it. Let's dispute it. I mean, does it cost any money to dispute? Does it any point deduction? I mean,
no.
Is there any penalties for dispute?
Not yet.
No.
Right, not yet. That's the thing. When I ran Nopi and I disputed one judgment call, I was taxed $150. I was like, no way.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then it was only paid. You only had to pay it if the dispute was invalid, which thank God it was valid. So
yeah,
I remember that. Yeah, a bunch of people do.
It was against Sultan, right?
Yeah, Sultan.
I remember that.
That's the thing. That Sultan was a very grown man about everything, and I respect him greatly for his...
Sultan's a cool guy.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy.
I got 2 points. One, first point is, the main reason why I actually started watching FD this year, before I never really considered it, this year was because of Florida guys.
Yes.
And the second, going back to the whole dispute thing, it kind of makes you wonder what happened with the whole Chelsea Inofa and Tyler McCrory thing.
Oh,
yeah.
That
was a big, huge controversial
was,
thing.
That same
you
event
know,
was
you
just
guys film me on that, because I don't think I caught that one.
What? How can you not have caught that? That was like the most talked about thing when it happened.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about it now. Because I don't remember it. Maybe I mean, knew about it then, but
okay.
That's
what's
down.
People listening to this might wonder why.
Okay. Basically what happened was on the first run, Chelsea was in front. And now the judges say he sort of screwed up a little bit, minor correction on the initiation part.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else was okay for the most part. Then when they switched around, Tyler McCrory was in front.
Oh, and this was at Wall.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. New Jersey. Yeah, now I'm remembering.
Now you remember?
Now I'm remembering.
Okay, well, Tyler McCoury was in front. He ended up crashing, and Chelsea had nowhere else to go,
right.
And he ended up crashing into him.
And Tyler McCoury gets the win.
And, of course, that was the infamous quote, Tyler McCoury gets the win.
Yeah.
So that was a huge debate about that.
That is definitely
and,
wrong.
And what it basically came down to, and I sort of can agree with the judge's decision on it, was the fact that they basically scored that run with both drivers getting zeros, and they just looked back to the first run to determine the winner from that. And because Chelsea screwed up on the first one, what they felt, he screwed up more on the first one, they decided to give Tyler McCoury the win for that.
Yeah.
That's a reasonable call.
Because we did that with the King of County line.
Yeah.
There was time where... who was it? I think it was Dayron versus Alec McEwen, where one had a major correction on one run, so Alec McEwen got it, and then on the next run, McEwen like had a major straighten out, and you know we gave it to Dayron and issued it one more time.
Yeah,
so it was like zero versus zero. So yeah, that's a rough thing to deal with.
It's a rough thing because the crowd doesn't see it the same way.
No, they look at both runs together and who screwed the most between the total.
There's so many ways that you could look at it that you could argue on it. Like, for instance, in regards to that run with Tyler McCoury and Chelsea Denofa, Tyler crashed first.
Yeah, you could say he, in essence, zeroed out his run first.
Exactly. Yeah. So if Tyler crashed first, then he should be out.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing is, Chelsea had nowhere else to go.
Yeah,
because we implemented that too. Is that we told people in the driver's meeting for King County Line, if the guy in front of you, if he spins out, you already won.
Yeah,
and we did that at USDC. You already won. Save your tires, drive off.
Yeah,
you have to complete your
beyond
run.
That. I mean, it's a safety call. It really is. It's as if the guys, and you know, you're doing tandem, so the competition, you're getting
regular
close.
Racing, but they do in regular racing. Yellow flag goes up, the warning flag, somebody spins out, or something
it's
happens.
It's a victory lap, basically.
Right.
But not just that, but I'm saying in drifting, everybody's close, up close and personal. And you have to make a safety call. Do I pull a rick and extend them, chuckle behind them? Do I accelerate? Do I spin out? Whatever what you need to do, it's your safety goal. And a lot, there's people that are thinking that he just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, where others saying like he had nowhere to go, which the way I see it, he had nowhere to go. But there's still a discrepancy. Oh, he kept pushing and he just, you know, did this.
And Chelsea pointed out that it could have been a lot worse if he didn't react fast enough the way that he did.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, but then again, a lot of the people who are arguing, and that's one of the things that I've heard somebody from, not from Florida, say, that the reason why it's a huge discrepancy is because there's a lot of Florida guys wanting Chelsea to move forward. You know, I don't think that's the truth. I mean, yeah, we're going to root for your local guy. Everybody knows Chelsea. Everybody likes Chelsea. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, let's be honest here, he had nowhere to go. You're trying to get close to the guy, trying to keep up with him.
No, it wasn't.
You have to do what you got to do.
It wasn't so much of a Florida thing. It was pretty unanimous in regards to the uproar on what they witnessed and what they saw.
Yeah,
it was. I mean, for the most part, it's something that it was. Common sense will tell you it's like, okay, well, the guy in front screwed up. That's it. He's out. He screwed up. The guy in front screwed up. He was the first to screw up.
Yeah.
But then when you see something like that, like the reverse happened, the outcome isn't what you expected. You're like, WTF.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then it goes back to the whole, all the other criticisms about...
Mm-hmm. Just pick a judging method and stick with it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If you're going to give somebody... If somebody zeros out their run spins or whatever, and it comes down to each run is whoever spins first automatically loses that run. The other guy can finish off his run. If you're going to judge it like that, then Chelsea should have got the win.
Yeah.
If you're going to judge it, well, this driver, if he hits the wall, the other driver's still got to finish his run, or he's going to get a zero, and then they both get a zero. We're going to use the other run to determine the winner. Then you judge it like that, but just go either way.
But see, here's another example where you're kind of like, okay, WTF. I forgot what event it was. I think it might have been the same one. It was Chris Forsberg against Daigo Saito.
Yep, that was the same event.
Daigo Saito was leading, and Forsberg was following.
Right.
And it was the last turn, and they were finishing the run, and it was a... Well, the judges felt and saw that Daigo let off intentionally.
But Forsberg had more than enough room.
Yeah.
He was like a car away, at least minimum.
And Forsberg knows how to
get on your door. It's not like... That was a biased one.
I mean, these are trained professionals. They know when to speed up, when to slow down, and how to make safety calls. So that really is a safety call. But, I mean, pushing yourself, you got to leave a certain margin of error, not for yourself but for the driver ahead, because competition is you lead. You're going to do the best to get away, but at the same time, figure some way to make the other guy mess up. And that is, you make the line tight, you slow down a little bit.
It's a competition.
It's a competition. Yeah. And somebody taught me years ago, I mean, racing, any competition in motorsports, is not how good you are, whatever. It's how much can you cheat from the car to the driving level. It's really,
you're just trying to figure something out.
Find a way to get that edge to where the other guy cannot do what you're doing. And that's really what you do in the front. So you want to leave yourself. You got to get close, but I mean, you got to figure something out along the lines where this guy is either going to make a mistake or not, or he's off the line. Maybe give him a little bit of room and just make a cleaner path, a cleaner line than he does.
Right.
Do points. Whatever the case might be. I mean, I'm running along with it, but it's tough. And
Daigo Saito could have easily argued in that scenario, that situation, that I made a minor correction.
I thought he did.
Yeah.
But the judges felt that he intentionally let off. He purposely let off to screw up Forsberg.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, how do you know that Forsberg
was on his door at PBR. It didn't screw him up then.
Well, here's the thing though. Don't forget. I mean, if we look at Saito's run, I mean, the guy's just like, out of nowhere, he's got half a football field distance, and then you blink your eye and he's on your door, and then he's far away again. And it's the same thing when he leaves.
You hear the power and the fury of the 2J.
Absolutely.
Just have 2J to throw that for the win. Sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Carry on with that. Same thing when he's in the lead. He'll slow down to a crawl, but then out of nowhere, he just goes gone. And he will disappear.
But that doesn't always happen.
It's like a drag race.
It doesn't always happen. Like, for instance, at the final event against Matt Field.
Yeah, Field was
that was a great tandem.
Mm-hmm.
Tandem battle. They had to go one more time.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, don't.
And that was. I mean, Matt Field hit the wall a couple of times, and he didn't even put it. It made you wonder, where's all that horsepower in Daigo Saito's car when Matt had no problems keeping up with it?
So Matt was put his car in all the right places.
Yeah, he did.
Right, and that's the thing. You got to study. I mean, has anybody ever played any sports at all here?
Football.
Exactly. Have you guys ever watched other teams?
How they play? Yeah, you always watch
other teams. Same thing. You do the same thing in drifting. You go back
boxing,
and say,
any
boxing,
sport.
Especially in boxing. You sit there and you watch the guy, how he does the uppercut, how he executes every move. And it's the same thing in drifting. If you sit down, you watch your opponent, you try to learn the weaknesses and everything. You're taking it back to initial D. What do you think? I'm going to run this guy. I'll let him run in front. I'll see what he's making.
I'm so excited here.
Yeah.
I got Euro beat in my head.
Oh my God.
But Nisha D. I love Nisha D.
it is part of the competition. You study your opponent, you try to see where his weaknesses are, and you attack that in anything. And if he pulled that out, that amazing tandem, I'm sure he studied sight. I mean, he didn't just sat in a car and said, dude, I'm gonna ruin this guy today. I'm gonna poop on his cereal. Watch this tandem run. I'm sure he probably did, but he studied that. He goes, look, this is a notorious move. He does this. He does that. Don't expect the guy who's never been in the U.S. to show up and not bring anything new to the table.
Yeah, of course.
That's the thing. This guy's been drifting with the big dogs, with the original drifters in Japan. He's going to learn something. This guy's, they drift day and night. They have a 36-hour drift event.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Huh?
Yeah.
The Drift Matsuri.
Oh, bye.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. And don't forget, like I said, these guys have been at it for a while. They know the tricks that they they do it.
Well, the D1 guys, they're always playing tricks, and the judges don't look down on that. They see it's a competition. Bring out, bring out the edge that's going to make you win.
Absolutely.
So that's, and I don't know why FD is saying, is looking at this and being like, oh, he brake checked him, but he kept the drift. So what? You know, like, he messed the other guy up, but he kept the drift, so...
It's all strategy, man.
It's all strategy. And the problem is, and then I will tell you one thing that I see in racing a lot. In the American leagues and things like that, and championships, there's a lot of always rules, and it's always a chance to make it as fair as possible, finding one rule, and they're ever-changing.
Consistency is what they need.
Can you tell me what sometimes could be more exciting to watch, a supercar race from Australia or Le Mans, American Le Mans?
Supercar race.
Exactly.
The VA supercars?
VA supercars. The European VA supercars or the strong one. Wouldn't you want to watch that instead? Because these guys are always pushing the limit. They're bumping each other. They do everything so illegal. Mm-hmm. But yet, they finish the race. They come along. And at the end of the day, those guys party together.
Well, part of the reason part of the reason why VA supercars is a little bit more exciting to watch is because actually, all of the cars are pretty much the same. It's just minor differences.
But still.
So it comes down to driver. Who could be the better driver to get the win.
Okay.
It's almost like
a NASCAR, you think the driving style that some of these guys use at the track will be a lot in American Le Mans?
No way.
All those guys will be blacked out of the track within the first three laps.
Yeah, bloke.
Right. So you get what I'm saying. It's like a lot of the times the pursuit of finding the perfect rule book, it's infinite. It's always going to be changing the rules. It's always going to be doing something, and that's just the American way.
Yeah,
you know, and
along with the lawsuit.
Yeah, that too.
Well, going back to FD, another highlight I think, which nobody was expecting, was Jeremy Lowe knocking out JTP.
Oh. That was a good day.
That was epic.
Awesome. That was a good day.
Epic.
I enjoyed that.
I know.
I think I enjoyed that more than Jeremy Loaded.
We're going to go to South Beach and throw a party, like bang the pots and things.
I remember when we were at the skid pad, you were reading off the names who had made it, and you said J-Lo knocked out JTP, and it didn't compute in my head, like, right away.
I thought it was an error.
And then I was like, wait, repeat that? Like, that did not just happen. J-Lo won. I was like... Like, this is, like, a big turning point. Like, even FD interviewed him after that. They were like,
we got to check out this guy. What does he have? What can be a rotary?
These little things, they shake up the competition and they make you noticed.
Make noise.
So, these are some, you know, J-Lo is one of these guys that these other big teams should be looking at. Like,
definitely.
You know, he's got the talent. You know, he's just not as well funded. That's why he's not making all the run. Like, he's not making top 32 every run. But if you look at his runs, practice and everything, he's always going all out and he's consistent at the same time.
Yeah, sometimes Jeremy Lowe, I think, needs to. I don't know, maybe he does. It just seems like every time he goes to qualify, he does worse.
He gets nervous.
Has anybody talked to him? Have you ever talked about that? It just seems like he does...
No, not about that in particular, but...
But it does seem like...
He could pee in public, because it could be stage fright. I don't know. The reality is... Watch this guy get... I'll tell you, 2013's got a lot of positive things coming for J-Lo, for what I could see. Uh-huh. Good driver, you know, cool, calm, collective... And he's bringing a badass little car over to FD. They love it for what I've heard.
Yeah.
So, I think 2013's got a lot of good things coming for him.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I wish him the best. That guy's awesome.
Pat had a lot of ups and downs in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Starting off on Long Beach, I remember he was having some e-brake issues or steering issues.
Yes, he was having breaker. Well, it was. I think it was multiple things.
The car was just not running right.
But by the end of the year, his car's pretty straight. I know he's working on a different power plant, right?
Yeah, from what I hear. And he had a pretty good, decent run with going up against Mike Essa at Las Vegas.
Oh, definitely. He's a little more. He's the extra bit of power, and I think he'll if he can get his. I'm sure he will when he gets the car done. Hopefully, he does some shakedown and some practice in it before he goes to compete. But
wasn't he like? One of the lowest powered cars out there?
He was the lowest powered.
He says he dynoed, from what I've read, he dynoed 397 to the wheels with that car.
That's low.
Which in today's standards is very low, but if you go back a few years ago, like that was 400 horsepower is like, oh, he's got serious potential.
Jeremy Lowe is not much. He's just barely above him, isn't he? Like 450
no,
or something?
No, I heard he's like 600 or...
Yeah, he's like close to 6.
I heard something like a mid-season rebuild or something, and then that the car is just fast now.
It has tonneaus now.
Tonneaus.
I remember you should do that. I was putting nitrous on my car.
No. What? Oh.
Oh. Yeah, you like that, huh?
Well, it's a 1UZ. It'll handle it with no problem whatsoever.
Sure will.
Put a 500 shot.
Yes.
It'll take it.
Speak to Giacomo about nitrous.
Tonneaus.
Just talk to him about it. Say, hey, Giacomo, let's talk about nitrous. Anyways.
That bad?
I can't help.
No, he's doing it to his car right now.
Oh, no, I can't help.
Oh, yeah, now the secret's out. I'm sure Giacomo's going to be happy with that. That was announced on the podcast. We can't edit this out. I'm telling him.
Good
yeah.
job,
Noel. He doesn't care.
Oh, he does care. He told me. He's like, you know, I can't tell Noel anything. Oh, okay.
He's pissed, yelling at the sky, ripping the nitrous system out of the car.
You know? I bet you the nitrous system will be wrapped in carbon fiber.
I'm going to text him right now. I'm like, you know, Noel just blew your surprise.
No, I just... He's been telling most people about nitrous. He just didn't tell you how the nitrous is going to be applied.
Dude, he just took you off his Facebook
apply,
right
what,
now.
To his tires? No, it's obviously in his motor.
Nah, bro, it's in
he just took you off Facebook, so he's pissed.
Oh, okay. You're just different.
No,
don't tell Noel anything.
But I can't help but feel bad for Sultan Haju.
Oh
wow.
Yeah, he's like the forgotten Florida driver in a way.
Yeah. I kind of... felt bad for him.
His car issues, man. It's almost like take that throw it
let
away.
And no, you, I don't think it was so much car issues though.
I was watching him practice at Irwindale, and it looked like he was doing all right. And then, like on his qualifying runs, he'll do the bank, the transition, and then when he gets to the inner bank, it was just pooped out. It was like he'll spin out, or he'll just.
I think it's car, because he wasn't doing that bad when he had the car before.
Really?
Maybe it's also when he was back then. He was the field was. A little less than it is now. Like the quality of drivers were a little less. Maybe I don't know. But right now, it's just not looking. Is he going to compete in 2013?
I don't know.
There's a lot of money he put into that.
There's no word about that publicly, at least that I know of.
That we know of, we don't know.
Maybe we talked to him. I barely talked to him when I see him.
Yeah. I guess one final highlight I guess I could bring up was Chelsea going airborne with Pat Mordaunt.
Oh, yeah,
at Irwindale. That was
that was kind of weird. A drift wheelie. That was kind of
Pat Mordaunt. He's another guy. We'll see how he does in 2013 because he was just mainly trying to get his car ready almost the whole year.
Yeah,
it wasn't until the last event that he was really starting to showcase a little bit.
Yeah,
he was actually at CFRC at the aftermath, but I don't think he did much, did he?
I don't remember seeing.
I know his car was there. The trailer was there. It was aftermath. Yeah.
Really? Oh, I don't remember.
Right.
Yeah. A couple of the drivers decided not to drive that event. They just wanted to show off the cars and stuff.
So, what do you guys think about 2013 in regards to FD?
There's a lot of changes up to now, mid off season. We already got confirmation that Vonkin's going to Nittle Tire, but he's staying with ASD, which is the car builder for.
No, but ASD they're not going to be as key in Formula D as they've been, though. I know BRE is trying to... They're starting to do a lot more cars. They're almost like the new ASD coming out, because BRE is doing a lot of stuff.
What I want to know is... What
they did Grunewald. Aren't they BRE doing Grunewald?
They're doing Grunewald's car.
Falcon. What? I mean, because this guy's been Falcon since day one. I mean,
they ain't got tired of him. I don't know.
What happened was ASD and Falcon... decided to split after 2012.
So he stuck with ASD.
So he decided to stick with ASD, which
builds the car, which makes sense.
Which makes sense.
It does, I guess, if you think about it like
JTP, JTP, Dai isn't even part of ASD, but JTP decided to stay with Falcon, so let's see what they're going to build him. There wasn't. D-Mac, they're building an S14 for him. I know that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're building an S14.
The Sky is done, right?
Yeah, the Sky.
Oh, yeah.
Let's build another one. The car was like a tube car anyways.
Yeah, but that was with...
Why?
But
I don't know.
The Sky was with ASD, and he stayed with Falcon.
Oh.
So, that's how it... That being said, I don't think we're going to have a three-peat of Long Beach for JTP, being that he's going to be in a brand new car that wasn't built by the same people.
No.
So that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Well, you got several developments, not just with the whole Vonkin thing. Otto Graven. Supposedly he's going to be coming out with like a 1,000 horsepower Scion FRS.
Yep.
Sweet mother God.
How many people are going to the FRS?
You also have Dai building a BRZ.
For the 2014 season. He's just going to stay in his S13.
Yeah, but didn't he just... And he also bought that Charger, too, and those freaking NASCAR motors.
No, that's Daigo.
That's odd.
Oh, that's Daigo.
I would love to have that S13 if he gets rid of it.
I'll send him an email.
Dude, he came out with his own wheel line.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's not hard to do.
Oh, whatever, I guess.
Right, everybody has wheels now.
As long as you have money.
No, money, you don't have any money nowadays. Chinese will work for anything.
I guess.
But yeah, no, it's funny. The FRS, man, that's the new hot thing nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Of course. We got Max Arrieta switched over to that. Ken Nomura, who everybody knew to be a Nissan driver.
Not even that.
He's switching over to an FRS.
Yeah.
Really?
The smallest guy with the biggest car.
I bet she puts a Nissan motor in it.
No, it has a 2J.
Yeah, it has a 2J.
As a 2J.
Come on.
That breaks my heart.
Hello. Come on now.
That breaks my heart, though.
What breaks your heart?
He's a Nissan guy. I'm a Nissan guy, too.
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Are there going to be any Japan drivers extra besides Daigo this year?
There's rumors, rumblings, talk about more guys coming over, but I haven't seen anything confirmed yet.
There's nothing that's been confirmed yet, but there's a lot of drivers I would love to see over here.
Yeah,
I would like to see Yoichi Momura over here. He's the four-time D1 champ.
Kawabata.
Kawabata. Well,
I know he'd almost have a heart attack if Hibino comes over here.
He'd be screaming like,
I'd be asking you every event, can I crew for you?
I'll be your spotter. I'll do anything. I'll be your drinks. I'll take your oil.
I'll wax your flopper.
I'll wax your back. I'll keep your hood up. Whatever.
You don't need an engine prop anymore. I'll keep your hood up.
Yes,
whatever
yes.
you need. I will
see you wearing a skirt and holding an umbrella for this guy.
Yes.
Yes.
I would.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that.
And okay. I wouldn't shave.
Oh Lord Jesus.
Okay. So
Lord Jesus is actually.
So what else?
Push the envelope here on.
Huh?
Getting close.
Oh, I know. We're at the almost an hour 15.
Yeah, I don't think we got to the topics here. We're still 2012.
We're talking about 2013 now.
Wow. Time flies, man.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I gotta go through this car.
There's been
this guy texts me like, "Oh, I'm having fun driving your thing."
Well, that's not a good thing.
No,
well,
it's fine.
There's other developments. Nothing which isn't necessarily positive. Walker Wilkerson got his car stolen.
Oh, yeah.
That was crazy.
That was a
Did he get
scare.
It back?
Yeah, he got it.
He got it back.
But in one piece?
Well.
In the wall? Go.
Well, this is what happened. Day before Christmas, it got stolen. The day of Christmas, they found the trailer that the car was in. And then the day after Christmas, they found the car like a couple blocks down. But it's missing a couple of things. The motor's still there. Suspension's still there. He's missing a few wheels. A lot of, like, the Motec computer is gone. You know, that ain't cheap. And Walker isn't really funded by anything else but by himself. And he has sponsors and stuff, but he's still a privateer. So this is a lot. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, he's going to have to be paying out of pocket for, and it's going to be rough.
Mm-hmm.
Think I'll make it in time?
Yeah, I think he's gonna. I'm pretty sure a lot of people donate and.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, he's very, you know, he's very well liked in the drifting
community.
Yeah,
he has a huge fan base too. I mean, when that post came out, I remember seeing our Instagram. Every other post was that the car's been stolen. Keep a lookout. Da 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 da. I mean, I saw that post every other one for.
Where's
like
he from?
A few days.
He's now living in either NorCal or SoCal, but he's originally from the Washington scene. He got his pro license through Evergreen Drift, which is their Pro-Am series.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't want to hear about that. But anyway, we already talked about that.
Yeah. But he's okay, right? He's good.
Yeah, apparently he's good, and he just like put a story out or whatever about what happened, and I haven't read it yet. I haven't had the time, but... You know, it's there.
So, and of course, I guess you could say FD 2012's most talked about driver, Daigo Saito.
Of course.
Yes.
Developments with him. He ended up buying Sam Hubinett's old Challenger.
Oh. If he...
And bought a NASCAR motor for it.
I would like to see him drive that thing just as well. He's bought two NASCAR engines and that car.
Good Lord.
I want to hear his feedback on drifting V8s.
Well,
because there's something rising about V8s not necessarily being the ideal power plant over a boosted engine.
Oh, Garrett V8 killers, I mean?
The V8 hunters, yeah. There's rumors running around that he wants to drive an All-American V8 car for the next season. That is the rumor. It's not confirmed.
But it's happened before. Where I remember they were building a Mustang for him to drift with, and I think it was for D1. And
yeah, he never even did a lap in that car. And he has a S13.5 or whatever you want to call it.
Okay, whatever.
With an LS1. I see Tim is getting a headache.
That was the argument they had at the meet.
Yeah.
There's a blue S15. I think it was Gabby. He was like, "Oh, it's an S15."
Yeah.
And you're like, "No, it's an S13.5." And we're like,
"What
it's
is the
same
difference?
Thing.
What is the difference?
The back."
Okay, what is the difference?
I don't know. It's an S chassis. They're all easy to slide. I guess
the lights a little different.
Yeah, I could care less. It's a Nissan.
It's awesome.
Go ahead, continue.
Well, but Pioneer or Paul, whatever you want to call him, he told me that. Daigo,
so now you're throwing names, dropping.
Yeah,
well, okay, that's fine.
Pioneer, I'm sorry if you're listening. He told me that he was driving the LS1 car, and he said he didn't like it. He didn't like the LS1 power plant in the S13. It didn't feel right.
Because he used to...
Yeah, so...
I think he's been spoiled by the 2J for so long that he... Anything else just doesn't compare.
Everything else is uncivilized.
Civilized. Charles Barkley.
So, let's see if he decides to come out with a Challenger or another car with a V8. Apparently, with the Challenger or the two NASCAR V8s, he's going to high revving V8s. So
that's why he got the NASCAR, so he can get, because he used to revving high with the regular LS1. You're not getting those high revs.
Yeah, anything after like 65.
Like, what was the guy with the 350Z? He had a NASCAR. Toyota Cup motor or something like that, right?
Yeah, he had the Sprint Cup NASCAR motor.
Yeah, and he's getting rid of it, I heard.
I don't know what's going on with that, but he...
Why would you get rid of that motor? I don't know.
That car, I think, in the right hands would have been...
Tanner Foss had a NASCAR motor in his PC.
Foster had a badass motor.
Yeah. Well, his NASCAR motor was the lower level, like 500 horsepower NASCAR motor.
Oh.
The other one is the 800 plus.
Oh, boy.
Whatever. And they rev higher. And
whatever.
All that.
Next topic.
hold on. But Jeremy Lowe's trying to get sponsored now by Champion.
Champion Motorsports down here?
No, Champion the spark plugs.
Yeah.
So he gets free spark plugs. Yay!
No, it's a $50,000 sponsorship.
Oh, that's a much needed sponsorship.
I think you get wires too.
That'll help him go to all the events through the whole season.
Yeah,
pretty much.
If you haven't done so, it's competition at this.
Has anybody?
At the time
has
of this
Champions
podcast.
Ever sponsored anybody before?
They sponsor people.
Yeah, they sponsor people.
Really? I don't know.
But for drifting, I think it'll be a first.
That's what I'm saying. For drifting, that's what
I mean. Think. No, I don't think it's a first, but I think it'll be the first time being a big time
sponsor.
Sponsor/promotion, if you will.
That's good. You know, and it's black and red, right? The little red on his car.
Yeah, it kind of
fits into his whole scheme too.
Yeah.
Good
for him. I know Pat's trying to get something together.
Yeah, but he's pretty much sponsored by Njuku, though. They built his car.
He's trying to move over to something else. Remember, he put up his powertrain for sale.
Right. He's been selling that for a while. He's really still trying to get someone to buy it.
Yeah. FYI, Patrick Grin is trying to sell his LS1 swap at the current time of this episode. It's at $4,000.
Oh, $4,000.
Wow.
Patrick Gooden is trying to sell his LS1 swap.
Contact Bearcat for more info.
Yeah, Bearcat
forums.
Or Patrick Gooden on Facebook.
Whatever. Same thing.
You can find him somewhere. And Jeremy Lowe needs your vote for to win that sponsorship from Champion.
Oh, so how do we vote for him?
You go to the Champion website. I found the link through Facebook.
I found the link through the forums.
Is it on the forums?
Yeah,
it's on
under
the forum.
Champ Dog. That's the name of the
Champ Dog?
The title of the thread.
So definitely encourage everybody to vote for Jim.
Yeah.
He definitely deserves it. I'd love to see him get that.
Go to that thread, the Champ Dog thread, on the drifting section of the forum, SFL Drifters Forum. And click the link. It'll take you over to the champion website, his driver profile. Register and vote for Jeremy Lowe. Vote each day. It's not just one day. You vote every day. You vote for Jeremy Lowe.
Okay.
And it'll be added to him.
And when does it end?
Next month, I think.
I am not even sure about that.
I don't know about the forms. I also want to bring up. Maybe I don't know if you're planning on talking about it, but almost overlooked him was Boxmont, Jason Giovanni.
That's one of the other things. Yeah, he's going to be making his
pro debut.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Rookies are going to be in there? Hopefully no other Japan rookies come in.
Well, I don't know. That's funny. I see what you did there.
Because then you have the whole Chelsea thing.
Yeah.
Because Boxmont's a great driver, and I'd love to see him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be interesting with Boxmont. Hopefully he can have the power level to compete.
Boxmod for people that I think you're right.
Jason Giovanni. Yeah, that's one guy to look out for this upcoming year.
Yes.
And Chelsea, it hasn't been confirmed, but it's safe to say that he's going to still be driving with Bergenholtz Racing in the RX-8.
They worked on an agreement.
That's good.
Because the contract that he signed before. For the previous year was just until the end of the season.
Right, because it was halfway through the season.
Yeah.
You're throwing them in a new car, trying to expect them to compete, you know. But from what I heard is that the problem that the Bergenholz race team is that, I forgot his name, Jun Meng wasn't giving the tuners
feedback.
I think you spoke to, didn't you speak to, I don't know who I heard that from, but Jun Meng wasn't giving the Bergenholz race team enough feedback to make the change that needed to be made. And, of course, we all know Chelsea, he's going to drive the car, and he's going to
take a major
part in making that car right. Because I don't know why you wouldn't do that as a driver. Why would you want to drive something and there's something wrong with it and not tell anybody?
Yeah.
You want to fine-tune that. I mean, of course, you want to be competitive.
I remember with Chelsea, when I spoke to Chelsea, and it was around the time that he first got into the car, he was telling me that the car was all over the place. Right. And he actually had to work with them to kind of get the car the way how...
Drivable.
Not just that, but the way how his E36 used to react.
But his driving style, period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the major things was, he was telling me, when he would floor it with his E36... Not only would it get sideways, but it would propel forward. It would still have the grip to go forward.
BMW. Yeah.
But, no.
Just saying.
Yeah, okay. The RX-8 just wasn't doing that.
I think it was stock transmission, too. Just saying, go ahead.
The RX-8 just wasn't doing that. Instead of it propelling forward and going full throttle, it would just want to just wrap around or do something just not what he wanted.
Yeah, and also, if you think about it, Chelsea's E36 rivaled Daigo's smoke and power and the weight. And Daigo had twice as much horsepower, but it was Toyota, so.
Well, I'm sure.
I'm sure during those battles, when
Daigo realized who he was going up against, he was like, oh, let me just turn it down. Give him a little more of a chance.
I don't think so. I think he turned it up.
Turn it up to suck so I could be competitive.
Yeah.
Right. So, I guess at this point, it's pretty safe to assume that Chelsea's going to be driving the RX-8 for 2013. And hopefully he does great with it.
Mm-hmm.
He showed a lot of promise driving it so far.
Yeah, it was cool to see him at the track the other day. That was cool.
Huh?
A few months ago at the track for that little video shoot. That was cool.
That was cool. And also, he might still be doing XEC. I don't know for sure. But he has that E46.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So let's see how that goes. Pro-Am, 2012.
Right.
Had his ups and downs.
Yes.
Bill Fisher won Atlanta. That was one event.
Which was awesome to watch in person. Yes.
Mm-hmm. There was a couple of lows. For instance, A6 guys trying to compete, and it didn't work out. As expected at the Palm Beach event.
Yeah, no, it didn't.
Yeah. Tim participated in the Pro-Am in 2012.
Yeah, Carl.
How was that experience for you?
It was being my first real competition. It was definitely nerve-wracking. I'm not at that level yet. I'm getting there, but not at the level yet where I can just take a couple practice runs. And I was also fighting tuning issues.
Yeah.
So, but... I enjoyed it. I had a good time. It was a good experience. I enjoyed going to Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
Had some issues there with the Wise Fab bolt snapping and breaking another diff. So, you know, that didn't work out the way I wanted it to.
That diff, what was that factory?
Yes, it is factory.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay, all right. Factory, right. Go ahead, carry on.
1987 factory.
Uh-huh.
Holds up pretty good, though, for the most part.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Well, I have experience with bad diffs.
So let me know
BMW.
About the 87 diffs. How are they? How are 87 Toyota diffs?
Hey, let me ask you something.
Change subject.
Wait, hang on. Didn't Chelsea have to change diffs on his Beamer in Atlanta? I think so.
Well, here's a better one. Here's a better one. I recall a local driver having to jam wood in his around his differential to keep it from like falling off. You could safely say the car was sponsored by Home Depot. Because
can you confirm the driver or the car? Wood, at least
I think it's, I know who.
Oh yeah,
I think I know who.
I'll make it simple. He traveled with me to St. Louis.
You can use Eric. Does he say was it Eric?
No.
Eric's not a pro driver.
I don't know who this is.
I know
it's a silver E36.
E36.
It had a different kind of different color.
He's a lover boy.
From West Palm.
He's a lover
Red
boy.
He drinks Red Bull like water.
He's a lover boy.
Oh. Okay, yeah, that's a different story. That's a different story.
Every lap, he'll do a practice lap, he'll come back, drive it up the rig, we're using
BMW's
the Parker hauler.
Chelsea's running the same car.
Jamming wood in there because the thing would get twisting, breaking, snapping.
Anyhow, whatever.
But, so 2013, well, Jason, he competed too. He got his license. Nate Hamilton too competed in that, and I think he'll be
and Rapper Dan Savage.
Rapper Dan Savage
got his car.
So I guess you got a couple more rookies to be going into next year.
It's gonna be a rookie of the year. Provided we don't get any pro Japan drivers, I really don't think they should be counted as rookies.
We also that's might get Juha Rintanen from Finland, which
Juha?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so and he's pretty
for
gang-
FD or for Pro Am?
No, for FD.
Okay,
The boy's gangster.
So 2013 Pro Am, Tim. What are you doing to prepare for that?
Trying to get my car running again. I was hoping to have the other shell done, but my garage still isn't built yet, so that's not going to happen probably 2014.
Uh-huh.
So I just got to... I'm probably going to spray the car again real quick just to clean it up, make it a little more presentable. Doing a new computer, new turbo setup, stroke the motor. Motor's a little bigger now. We'll see. I've been so busy. Motor car's been down for like six months now, or 7 months. Just been busy with organizing the fence, but I really want to get the car done. Got my motor lift back today, so hopefully with the next week or so. Yeah, just doing so much with the events, you know, the fire fighting stuff, and you know, my son. I just not enough hours in the day.
Yeah.
But I plan to do Atlanta, PBR, and either Z-Max or Charlotte Motor Speedway. I think I'll do Z-Max because I've already done Charlotte Motor Speedway, depending on the budget. It all depends with the budget. But at least one Charlotte, PBIR, and in Road Atlanta. Those are three events I definitely plan to do. But you know me as well as anything, I'm not looking to go pro.
Yeah.
I want to use the Pro-Am to push my limits, to teach me more. Because, for instance, when I went to PBIR and I was struggling with the car, breaking up a little bit, whatever... When I went to Aftermath, it was like I was running with weights on and I took the weights off. Does that make sense?
Night and day difference.
Yeah. It was a night and day difference. My confidence level was way higher.
Yeah.
And I mean, I sucked like crazy at PBR, but you know, whatever. You know, I missed it. I qualified 17th. No, I qualified 18th at PBR. And at Charlotte, I qualified 17th. So hopefully, the next Pro-Am event, I'll get 16th. 16th.
Good work.
18th, 17th, 16th. That's my goal.
Good progress.
That's my goal. I'll be 16th.
Okay. Now, I missed this during the Q&A session. Juan, are you thinking about doing at least one Pro-Am event this year? Or
I'm considering. I'm still...
On the fence about it?
Yeah, pretty much on the fence about that.
Yeah, focus on getting the car. You don't want to take the car unless...
Well, it's just like I said, I don't want to... There's a lot more work I'm putting into the car, so it's not like I want to go testing doing it at a competition like that.
Right.
So, I mean, I would love to. Don't get me wrong. It's been something I've been dying to do for years.
Right.
But
we got a road trip.
Yeah, especially since they're coming in South Florida. I mean, who doesn't want to have a pro event in their backyard?
Right.
So that's something I'm still, like I said, considering. I have another shell with a fully approved cage that I might use.
Do anybody know when the registration starts opening up for any of these events?
Oh, I don't know. But you better act fast whenever it opens because it goes fast.
Especially for Road Atlanta. PBIR, not so much, but Road Atlanta, boom. 15 minutes.
I hear like getting to registration of program, it's like camping out a Best Buy for Black Friday. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, not even because camping out Best Buy, at least you're going to get in Best Buy. You know, the chances you're going to get in. It's just a matter of how soon.
Actually, talking about that, you bring up a funny story that happened to Jason. He actually missed the window opportunity to buy himself a ticket to go to Pro-Am at Atlanta. So what he did was he still got ready, drove over to Pro-Am in Atlanta.
I did too. I would have got in if I would have passed tech.
Thinking that he was hoping that somebody would drop out.
Right.
And luckily he did. So luckily somebody dropped out and he was able to get in.
A few people I would have got in if I would have passed tech. But that's another issue.
Yeah. Another big issue.
Hold on. You didn't pass tech?
You know why I didn't pass tech?
Why didn't you pass tech?
Because my wastegate exhaust was going through my hood. Can you do?
Yes.
Yep.
Indeed. That was another debate. Because there was another driver, pro driver, that had his wastegate come up venting through his hood. And that was fine. But not for me.
Guess not.
No, but anyways, so...
So let's switch gears.
Yes, switching gears and start winding down.
I'm trying.
So, okay, all right.
We have a lot to say. We have a lot in our minds.
We can always save something for Bush's the next one. I don't know. Go ahead.
All right, fine. Major discussion that happened.
Uh-oh.
CFRC's tech changes.
CFRC's tech changes.
Hot topic.
Yes, indeed.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing, and I'm glad to see that they're doing that. There are some people consider off the wall requirements that they're asking beyond the standard tech.
Yeah.
Items. Well, I don't know. It's offensive because I know a Bearcat said we were, you know, for lack of better terms, you know, talking crap. Well, we weren't. I don't see that we were talking crap or talking bad about CFRC. We were saying something. I love CFRC. We always talk about how great the venue is.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if what we talked about, whether they think it was crap or not, if it makes them step up tech or just enforce tech, everybody wins.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's no hard feelings. I don't know why there would be. But stepping up tech is what needs to be done, whether it's standardized or not. For the most part, tech is going to be standardized because everybody's looking for the same things, the battery tie-downs, lugs, all basic stuff that I tell people, a new car will pass tech. If you could just take your car and put the safety features that a car comes out of the showroom, you're going to pass tech, no problem, at our, you know, grassroots events.
Yeah.
That is not out of reach, and it's not unrealistic for anybody. You have helmets over 2005.
Yeah.
If you have a helmet that's 10, 15 years old, there was an instance that I heard that Sal didn't have a seatbelt in his car when he wrecked. For the passenger side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like that's – if he has somebody in the passenger side and he gets in a wreck, it's – thank God nothing has really happened. I mean, I know there have been talk about County Line being sketchy, but we haven't had – the instances we've never had the instances, and we've been doing it for 7 years, which is a lot longer than CFRC has been doing it.
Yeah.
We've never had a car go over the wall, which they've had. We've never had cars get on top of the wall. The most we ever had is a car tapping the wall. When CFRC first started out, they didn't have any walls.
Yeah,
that's scary.
Right.
Yeah,
I was actually at an SWD event, and it was almost run like a con. They didn't have any walls either for spectators.
Yeah,
you know. You know, kind of sketchy or not, fact is that more cars are totaled at CFRC, but I think they're looking at the sketch, like maybe sketchiness is as far as spectator safety versus driver safety. I think CFRC is more, I guess, when they talk about that, like, you know, County Line. Unfortunately, my hands are tied County Line. Everybody knows I don't have money to buy K-rails, and that's up to the track owner.
Well, not everybody knows that.
Well,
the problem is that people come in there and they're like, they see some, they have concerns over certain things, and they don't know that you've pushed to improve these things that people point out, and you could only do so much.
Yeah, since the beginning, I've always told the owners, we need more K-rails, we need more walls. And Pete, at that time, he had a lot of walls there. We actually had a good amount of walls in the beginning. Remember when all those... But then when we started doing skid pads, they moved half the walls down to the skid pad.
Yeah.
And I told Tony, I was like, listen, I tell him all the time. I talked to Rob Fleming. Rob Fleming was like, listen, I totally agree with you. You're preaching to the choir because this is something that I know is dangerous, but you're asking me to ask my volunteers to enforce. We don't pay anybody. And you want me to make somebody stand there and enforce it? I mean, especially from CFRC's standpoint, their volunteers don't enforce anything.
Yeah.
You know, they don't enforce tech. They're not at the line. They're just running the line. So don't criticize me when your volunteers are doing the same thing. But you got to think about it. You can't push a volunteer. You don't pay them anything. What are you going to yell at them? It's like, yeah. Then they just get up and leave. Only thing you give them is free entry.
Yeah.
That's it. So the track owner doesn't want to supply the people necessary to keep the audience off the wall. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to supply the barriers. What, am I supposed to stop running drifting events because the owner won't make it safe for the spectators?
Mm-hmm.
It's no. Why should I do that?
Yeah.
You know? My hands are tied.
You've
been with me the whole ride, and you understand.
I understand. Unfortunately, not everybody understands. You can't necessarily be broadcasting to everybody the whole situation because not everybody's going to care about it.
And tell you the truth, that's one of the main reasons why I never really wanted to promote County Line for drifting as much because it can't handle and it's not set up for big crowds.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why I don't do that. That's why I don't push it because my only way to limit the danger for the spectators is to limit the spectators.
Yeah.
I would love to promote and do more advertising, and I know the owner would love it too because it'd bring more money to his pocket.
Yeah.
You know, we used to do flyers all the time. Remember, we used to always do flyers, make flyers. I stopped doing that because it was just getting to the point where it is dangerous for certain spectators.
Yeah.
And you don't want to see somebody get hurt.
Yeah.
But like I said, I can't pay anybody, and I can't bring the walls in. If somebody else wants to donate them, hey, we'll put them up, and that's great. But don't criticize me for lack of thing when it's out of my control. If you have a problem with it, contact Tony at County Line. Say, listen, something needs to be done. Otherwise, you're preaching to somebody that I already understand what you're going through. I understand what you want, but I can't do anything about it.
Yeah. But CFRC has definitely done a great job in working on improving the track conditions.
Well, they've had help.
Of course they've had help.
I don't
help,
have any help in that
but
level.
We have to point out that...
No, yeah, it's
that it's
phenomenal.
Gone from somewhere that it's definitely not... From the beginning, it wasn't necessarily safe.
At all.
And it's gone to almost a professional facility.
Yes, I agree. I don't totally agree.
Now... So now, going back to the whole discussion, the main argument I think that a lot of people talking about it is some of the extra rules that they're trying to enforce.
The car setup requirements.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To be a little bit more specific, they pointed out that the car has to if the car has power steering, it must work.
So then that would mean like. If somebody does like a rack and pinion or like an old 86, it didn't have power steering, so they're not going to deny.
Well,
that's I guess that's
yeah,
what
no,
I was falling.
That's
well,
actually,
why not switch to a manual rack?
That's what you could. As long as it's designed to run
being
like
a manual
that,
rack, then that's fine.
That's fine.
Okay, so you just can't
but
have
if you
sloppy
take your,
components.
Right, if you take your power steering rack and you just disconnect and plug the holes. No, they don't want that.
Huh? No, actually, no. I actually got clarification on that.
Oh, okay,
and. If you have a power steering rack but don't have the belt, the pump, or any of the lines, you're okay.
Yeah, you just don't want anything leaking or coming undone, I guess. That's
exactly.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
The problem was is that they didn't really
explain it
and clarify it and go into specifics as to what they're looking for.
Right.
Okay.
And I've already pointed this out to them.
Okay.
But that was one of the issues. When you're not so specific. It opens you up. It leaves you vulnerable for people to take advantage of it and find loopholes
and
in
stupid
the whole,
questions.
Not to mention, criticize the hell out of it.
And some of the other things that they want is, for instance, they don't want anybody to drive with an open diff.
That I disagree with.
They don't want.
You're not allowed to drift with an open diff at CFRC.
I've never heard of that anywhere.
Yeah.
Well,
and trust me, Jason Giovanni voiced his opinion on that.
Yeah, and give you somebody's opinion, Patrick Gooden says that it's a waste of time.
Don't waste your time.
Okay, look, I can understand that to a certain extent, but I mean, you can't. I mean, I see people do amazing things on open diff.
Yeah.
And it teaches. I think running an open diff teaches you how to weight transfer more than relying on the power and your both wheels turning.
I think it helps build the driver to adjust to instead to shortcomings of the car to become a better driver to where he gets the next upgrade and he's that much better of a driver because he practiced with the lesser setup and he's like, okay, well now I'm a badass with this crappy setup. Let me step it up, so now I'm even better. I mean, that's what some of the original guys did. I mean, I recall back in the day, man, I was open diff the whole time.
Highly
speedway, dude. We're doing ovals, the highly speedway, linking the entire track, including the oval,
that's right.
Open diff.
Yeah.
And then we talk about KA's open diff with stock suspension, just a nice sturdy clutch and a homemade intake and exhaust.
Yeah.
And we were doing it. So, I mean, I think maybe they should limit to where, okay, you guys can tandem or you guys can do certain things, but I don't know. The open diff is just a
But here's
rule.
The argument. How effective do you think you'll be or a beginner will be drifting with an open diff at a track like CFRC?
But it's never that. I mean, I think it's starting to put it to where, like, you have to meet a certain requirement to drift. I mean, I like the fact that you got a car, you got a driver's license, your car's somewhat okay running or at least up to standards. Go out and have a good time. It shouldn't be limited. And here's the other thing. You cannot tell me that open diff cannot link a small or particular track. Yeah, CFRC is a high-speed track.
But here's the thing. You didn't necessarily answer my question. Do you think do you think a beginner can be effective drifting an open diff on a track like CFRC?
All right. In a direct response, no.
Okay.
But, again, there's always...
Then, you shouldn't tell somebody they can't try.
Right, exactly. And that's my problem. You can't just tell the guy. Dude, I know so many people that want to get a diff, but they just cannot afford it. They can't even afford a ticket to get welded somewhere.
Like, you're not worthy, so come back when you're worthy. Almost.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like
you and your car are peasants, so step away. And that's not the idea. The idea is to be open for everybody. I mean, look, I will tell you right now. I know a driver who's a friend of mine who started, and I actually pushed him to tandem with me. I had an SR20 with the same diff that I have, SR20, Cusco, two-way LSD, and I told this driver, he didn't want to tandem with me. Oh, I got a K with exhaust and open diff and just coilovers. I'm like,
so Fink?
Yes. I don't want to throw a lot of names out there, but I challenged this kid. I'm like, look, chase me. You don't have to lead. I told him the first time. You lead, so I'll stay behind. Don't worry about it. And he was trying so hard to get away. He did an awesome lap. I mean, immaculate lap. But this is not skip bed. This is actually first lap, big track.
Uh-huh.
So it's something that he had to push hard for. He did a really clean lap to where he actually was. I was trying to go as slow as possible, and he was on my door, so I had to speed up.
Yeah.
So he was good. He has talent, and I think a driver that has to overcome these issues with a car will become a better driver. I bet $1 million that if the rules were set back when Pat had a 100% stock car and was just trying to come up, he would dispute that rule himself.
Yeah.
And it's one of those that, I see the point behind it. I just don't think it's a fair point for everybody, Not everybody could afford LSD or even weld their own LSD.
Or has to drive the daily on it.
Right. And I would tell you right now, I think that welded LSD is the most ludicrous thing for a car that's daily driven.
Mm-hmm.
Welded diff.
LSD, which would be crazy.
Whatever. No, some people weld their LSD.
Welded diff.
That's stupid.
If it's a clutch type LSD, like I know 86 is with welded discs.
But you know,
those are 86s. They don't know what the heck they're doing. They're doing all these crazy things. You're like, okay.
But you understand where I'm going with this, to say.
No, I definitely understand, and it's crazy to think that a venue can not allow someone to enter with something like an open, or better yet, they require you to have your car be a certain way.
It's like you can't have a 16-ounce Coke in New York.
Yeah,
it's a shame.
Yeah, it's getting to that point. You
want to
hear? So let me tell you.
It's drift socialism.
Exactly. And let me tell you something.
Anarchy.
You said if I bring a factory vehicle, it will pass tech, 100% factory.
Yes.
So let's just say, and I'm going to tell you this because it blew my mind away when I found out. Let's say tomorrow I go buy me a 2013 C63 Mercedes-Benz.
Open diff.
Factory open diff. You mean to tell me I cannot take my vehicle to the track?
You're wasting everybody's time.
Yes.
Dude, that thing, if you throw it hard enough, that thing will spin both wheels. It is a waste of time. You think these people don't want to see that car go sideways?
Okay, yeah, well, that's not the norm, though.
But it obviously is far from normal. And,
right.
You know,
but the thing is, even these people that are failing with open diffs, they bring people to watch them fail. Well, maybe not fail, but they bring people to watch them progress. Like, for instance, we had, remember Carlos Lopez?
Okay.
He always just brings family, like, you know, as he was learning when he wasn't doing that good. He brought his family. They came to support him.
Right.
So you're
extra attendant.
It's extra attendant.
Right.
Yes.
And it's the thing. Your friends and family don't come to watch you be a badass. They come to watch you, period. Whether you suck or you're on the place.
Yeah, let me tell you, if you're going to go by people suck, I'll tell you, I've been to CFRC. You're going to have 10 drivers there every night. They're allowed to drive. Everybody else is not going to be able to drive.
Right. And
you have 10 drivers, and then you have a three-hour session.
And where are those people expected to come to or where to go to play around?
Right.
You know, and then you're pushing it back.
It's like a drag strip. Everybody goes. You see station wagons go, trucks go.
Right.
You see everybody goes. Everybody.
Right.
I think Box Mod said this. They paid for the time. If they go out there and fail it up on the time they paid for, then so be it.
Yeah.
Now, you should do things like, listen, if you spin out twice, enforce a rule. Like, don't spin out more than twice. Spin out more than twice and get off the track so you're not wasting everybody else's time. That's when it becomes an issue. CFRC is so long that somebody can spin out 30 times on one lap.
Oh, no, trust me. I've been
there. We've had people spin out six times in a skid pad.
Yeah.
And I have to tell them, I was like, listen, if you spin out twice, you need to pull yourself off. If you have a problem with that, then you just need to sit down. You need to chill out for an hour. Take some time.
Pull out.
or give Captain Ben the wheel.
Yes, indeed. Give me the wheel.
Like I said, I see where it's coming from because I'll be the first one to say watching people spin out of the track
on
solo runs sucks, man. Nobody wants to see it. But it's part of the learning process. And
It's not FD. This is grassroots.
That's where you go to pro-am events. That's where you go to pro events. To show that you're a badass, but until then you got to learn somewhere. None of us, you know, I don't think even the Drift King was, you know, born and like, oh, I could drift. Doesn't happen. You got to learn. You got to start one point. Yeah. And half these guys, man, drifting ain't cheap, man. Anybody will tell you, it's the cheapest one out there. Supposed to be, but it ain't cheap.
It ain't cheap either way. Any motorsport level.
What was the
expensive.
Third rule? I forgot.
Handbrake. Your e-brake has to work.
You have to have a heat, if you don't have a working e-brake.
Oh my god! You know how many drivers and Nopi didn't have an e-brake?
Yeah,
but that's Nobi, though.
Doesn't matter,
man. Different.
Doesn't matter. These guys were passing tech. E-brake was optional. Optional.
Right.
No, I agree. And, dude, you have to use your e-brake. And this is funny. This is ridiculously funny. Because I remember 5-6 years ago getting into arguments about, drifters that use e-brake are a bunch of pussies. I'm like, no. It's a very vital part of your drifting technique. And
it's another tool to use.
But it's not required, though.
I don't think it's required. I think it should be, it's a choice of driving style.
Yeah.
I'm a huge e-brake fan. There's other guys
I know. Yeah, I know you definitely are.
And there's other guys that, you know, you could put sticky tape on the e-brake and it'll be perfect by the time they get back because they never touched that e-brake.
Right.
So it's a driving style, you know. You can't be a Nazi and say you have to use this, you have to use that on an event when it's supposed to be part of a style. And Mm-hmm. Where you come in, I don't agree with these rules, but I mean, I don't.
It's not our track.
I don't make
them. They make the rules, but then again, it's up to them to enforce it. Are they going to jack the cars up and spin the wheels? I mean, how are they going? What does he say? Yeah, my diff. I've. How do you check that?
Do a burnout. Hey, I've done burnouts in open diff, and it's burned both tires. And I've drifted cars with J30 divs, and they break open.
Oh, yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, the J30 div, I hate that thing, man.
Yeah, once it gets hot,
it's over.
But what they are doing is they are going to define the track. They're cutting out tire sidewalls and painting them.
Well, that's great and all, but the whole thing is
that's going to be tremendous, at least as a driver that
yeah.
goes
but the whole
track.
Debate is these tech requirements or these requirements per se.
Right, but I don't want to just talk about the bad. I want to talk about the good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, the good thing.
We mentioned the good, how
right.
they've upgraded their safety and so
yeah,
forth.
Yeah, but, you know, I want
and the facilities.
Right. Now, hopefully they enforce the tech on a regular basis. I believe that the tech day is just like a tech learning day, like to show everybody what they need to do and how to set up their cars.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be hard to tell somebody, hey, tie your battery down and cover the positive terminal. What do you need to show anybody? That's self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Seatbelts that work. Lights that work.
All
you know, windshields. We do cracks as long as it's not hindering in the driver's, you know, view. It's basic stuff. But I think the biggest improvement will be, if they do it right, will be the lining of the track. And I think that's going to make a night and day difference. And they're going to see people failing up a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to make drivers before that were, oh, man, that guy's killing it. Now, like, oh, what's wrong with him? How come he can't connect the track anymore?
Because, he's got to follow a race line now.
Yeah,
it's not,
yeah.
You know, you don't make up your own track along the way.
It's going to be a lot of fail. It's going to be a lot of fail.
Yeah.
You're right. That's one of the things we're now.
It's going to make the drivers better.
When I was helping out at the actual big track events, first left or second left, a lot of the guys, like, I just don't see the corner. I don't see the point of entry. That's a huge challenge for a lot of the guys who have an idea how to drift a car, maintain a slide,
yeah.
but not to follow a course. And I think can't visualize it. They don't see the clipping point. They just see a corner, and they don't know how to, you know.
And that's a problem
start
that
wide,
CFRC has had until now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know,
yeah,
it'll be great.
I really wish I had the time. I really got to get start working on that car, getting the motor together.
Yeah.
Do it. Just put a 2J in it, call it a day.
They'll be there.
Yes,
not worth
indeed.
The money. Not worth
yeah, at least
money.
The pulleys will match.
It's not worth the money.
We'll line up.
Oh, I'd put an M50 in first.
Whatever. Okay, and switching gears to the last topic. Skip pad.
Yes.
Talk to us about the developments that are happening at our local skip pad here in South Florida.
Well, so what happened was after we did the podcast from the Christmas party after party. We did that.
Christmas party after party.
We had a chance to hang out at the track for a while. Of course, it was maybe 15 of us that were still there, 20 of us.
Which 70% of us were drunk.
Yes, 70% were drunk, dancing to some weird music and
singing to some
80s ballads. It was an interesting night doing some burnouts and some other stuff. I had Mig, of course, if you've been to County Line, you know who Mig is.
You can't miss him.
You can't miss him. He's at the gate. You
he's the
see
bear
him.
At the gate.
He's the
yeah,
the
grizzly. That's a proper.
He's the grizzly bear at the gate.
You always see his nipples.
It sucks. I think it was funny. It was like Voss went to the track. He's like, dude, you know what? He reached over me to put the wristband on the guy's car, and he put his nipple in my face.
Oh man.
Poor Voss. I don't think he's ever been back since. But anyways.
You're traumatized.
But that being said, Mig being in a jolly mood was the season, I suppose. He talked to Tony, and what they said is that every skid pad, they're going to give me $50 to make little competitions to give away.
Yeah.
And we spoke about some of these different competitions that we're going to come up with one this skid pad. But it's cool that, they don't really aren't putting the fencing up.
Yeah.
They aren't bringing any extra walls. But after 7 years, there finally looks like maybe a ray of light that they want to start making it more.
Putting more effort into it.
A little more effort into it.
And make it more attractive
for the drivers.
Yeah.
Make it something for the drivers to entice them to come and entice them to maybe, even though Skip Pad, okay, Skip Pad's small, but, you know, these guys aren't at that level. So for them, that's pushing it. Yeah. At their level, they're pushing it. So to push these new drivers to try new things, maybe try things that they wouldn't normally want to try because they're just focused on connecting the track, I think it's a great thing. And given, you know, if we give them $50, they pay for their admission, and they've got, it's like almost having two free track days.
Well, Noel should be excited because he now has the opportunity to win some money. For instance, when we have the competition for the worst car and the worst driver of the night,
yeah, but no,
Noel is a good contender.
Who won the worst driver award?
Chris Jackson.
Chris Jackson.
I am very mad that I didn't get it.
Well, no, Chris Jackson. He told me the other day. He's like, you know, I'm getting worse the more I drive. That's funny.
Yes,
I think he should win the Demolition Derby award.
Yeah, he's gonna be there tomorrow.
Awesome.
Yeah, and Icky's going to be there tomorrow early if he gets tired.
Hey, I got a couple of questions, though, in regards to the skip. But I haven't been there in a bit.
Okay.
As a fellow driver, are we getting more? Have we gotten more lights? I mean,
is the light an issue? We got a light that has all four lights at work.
Awesome.
If you haven't been to the skip pad, we've been plagued, and Juan knows this, with light towers, because, of course, everything there is portable. Nothing there. We don't have power at the track. Everything is on wheels, generated power, lights. It's just a long story. If you ever see me, ask me about it, and I'll tell you. But majority of the time, we've always had light towers with one light that works or two lights that work, and that's it. And it gets dark out there.
Yeah.
So lately, we've had pretty much for a while now, I can't remember last time we've had a tower that didn't at least have three working lights, but for the most part, all four lights have been working, and they've been putting a light tower in the pits.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a huge deal.
That is a big deal.
You know, we've had
stuff get stolen.
Right. And, you know, that's really good. The reason why I ask is I know, again, as a fellow driver, I know some of these guys want to get video and pictures, and it's tough to see it on camera.
Yes, it is.
You know, we could see the track. I mean, it's unless you're, like, really blind, you can't really see the track. We could see the track, but it's trying to get your friends out there to take pictures of you and take video and stuff like that. Some of these guys are coming into the game real fresh, real new. They want to brag about what they've done and their success.
And they want to be able to watch their runs so they can improve.
Right.
Well.
And then that's just a simple question. I mean, I personally know what the holdback is, but
okay,
I want to maybe put it out there. The other thing is, what is the judging criteria for this $50 reward?
We haven't really discussed it. We talked about some of it being crowd participation.
Crowd response.
Yeah.
We actually, to be quite honest, we haven't even figured out for tomorrow's competition.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to do some last-minute brainstorming.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out, don't worry.
I think we talked about drift kickball or something like that.
Drift football kick.
Drift football
like
kick or something. Field goal kick. We talked about...
We should get this huge beach ball out there.
Mentioned like maybe a drift tetherball, like hanging a ball with a string and seeing who can hit it hard and spin it around the pole the most. I mean, we're trying to think of all kinds of different things that, you know.
And, of course, the worst driver and the worst car award. That could easily go to Noel.
So you're saying the worst car is a Toyota? Did I get that right?
No. Specifically.
What do you drive?
I drive a BMW.
Yeah.
Good one. You drive a C4, what?
Yes. Also, another, it's a minor change, if it's a minor update, but we're changing the track layout just a little bit,
a tiny bit.
Oh, we're stepping away from the famous Yin Yang.
The thing is, we're changing some of the cones, some of the areas from inside clipping points to outside.
Ooh.
So we're switching it out to outside zones. And it'll be a lot better for tandems.
Question,
for sure.
What happened to the Gymkhana a little early?
Well, fortunately, due to so many negative feedback, we decided to pull out of it because...
We're only getting like two or three cars do it, and everybody was waiting for the drifting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, man, this thing is stupid.
Yeah, people didn't want to do it, and Bert was a champ.
He kept winning it.
Yeah, it's
tough to beat a little Corolla. It's really set well.
Yeah, it is with the Honda motor.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, he's pretty good. He goes to autocross events and everything.
Just saying.
I heard that.
Just saying.
Wait, huh?
You missed the whole
Honda
motor thing.
Funny there. I don't approve of what you just said.
That's fine.
Anyhow. Anything else that you'd like to point out?
No, that's all I got.
Okay, so you excited for tomorrow's skid pad?
No.
What?
I mean, it's another skid pad, another day.
All right, I guess whatever.
It takes a lot to get me excited.
In that sense, after about 2 hours...
Oh, sweet
Jesus. Yeah, I told you, man, it flies.
After about two hours. Drift Talk, we are coming to the end of this podcast, episode 4. Crazy.
Yeah.
Next episode, you can look forward to us talking about King and Countline for this year.
2013.
Probably let you know how the skip pad went, which competition we decided to go with, and who won.
Maybe we'll have some more information on the USDC on March 10th.
Yeah.
Possibly. Yep. We'll see.
Probably get some more info on Pro-Am and FD.
Report, maybe get some feedback from CFRC, how that went.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And talk a little bit more about what other events are occurring and what else occurs. And also follow up on Tim's rebuttal.
Yes.
On why he thinks BMW
is better than Toyota.
Is better than Toyota when in fact
you're saying it wrong.
No, I'm saying it right.
No, you're saying I think what I know.
Yes, indeed. Also, we'd like to thank our special guest for today.
The legend. The one and only.
The one and only, Mr. Juan Hino.
Thank you again.
We're glad to see you're back.
Yes.
We hope and we can only wish you the best. For this year.
Definitely.
And
get the buzz worked out. Do some road trips.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's for sure. Thank you, guys. Sure.
No problem.
Thank you, everyone, for listening in. We hope to hear from you next time. And we're signing off.